If you negotiate with your knee before standing up, you're losing that argument. Joint Relief Institute treats joint pain fast. And yes, it's covered by Medicare. Call 708-888-0000 as in zero pain.
I would like to thank Navy Pier for the beautiful fireworks display.
Yes.
Celebrating our 41st anniversary at the Sear Radio Place.
Woohoo!
That was a very nice of them to do that thing. If you would like to see what the fireworks display looked like, you can go to our Facebook page, and Johnny has just posted some of the fireworks pictures along with pictures of our drive into the radio place.
With a whole bunch of people out there tonight.
Yeah.
It's a wonderful night. I mean, you can't beat it, because immediately I flash back to that Valentine's snowstorm. There have been a couple of big Valentine's snowstorms.
Oh, sure.
Which are devastating to restaurants that are all booked up, and all of a sudden people go, well, we can't go out in a snowstorm. But today is perfect.
What was the Valentine's Day snowstorm, and we had come downtown. There was a staff meeting. And we were trying to make it home after the staff meeting.
Yeah, yeah. And it was a full-blown snowstorm.
Yeah. It took us, I think about 2 hours to get home. What is normally a 20-minute drive.
And as I recall, no one had predicted it. It was like, okay, there might be some flurries, and all of a sudden we're wading through flurries.
Yeah. Right?
Well, let's not belabor that point, because it's a gorgeous day. We've got some good stuff, as Mike said, coming for the next few days.
Yeah.
Can't beat it.
And this is kind of a special night for us, because this is 41 years ago tonight.
Yes.
Was the first time that the both of us were on this here radio station.
It was about this time that we finished up the show, too.
Yeah.
It was the 7 to 9 p.m. show, the evening show. And I joined
then you. Then program director Dan Fabian decided that he really wanted a him and her on the radio, and decided to experiment with us.
And he was in the hall with me. And at one point he opened the door and literally put his hand on my back and shoved me into the studio and said, go.
Because at that point I was doing some fill-in. I had just joined the radio station and I was doing some fill-in stuff. And he thought it'd be kind of a cool thing for you to, quote, surprise me on Valentine's Day.
Because we were newlyweds.
Yeah.
And I guess it was our first Valentine married. Yeah.
It was.
That's right. That was his hook. This is a perfect time. Go, girl. Shove right through the door.
And he'd always wanted to have a couple show.
Right, male-female.
And he had tried with Catherine Cataline and Michael Feldman. And that was oil and water and did not work at all.
Yes, which is hard to believe because they're both such wonderful people. But,
yeah.
Oh, the exchanges in the hallway were legendary.
Yep.
Yeah.
And you can read about that. You can go to our blog, and we have a post with a link to the story of the first night on this here radio place.
Well, hi, Ron Brown.
I'm just enjoying the story. It's a great story. and I couldn't help but think they were kind of taking a chance, weren't they? Because, couples, sometimes they don't get along on some days, and that can carry over, and then that translates to the listener. So they were taking a chance. They had no idea you were just perfect for each other, did they?
Well, I always maintain that every couple should have a radio show. If this is how you make your living, and if you got another job, you got something to fall back on, it's a different story. But if this is it, if this pays the bills, boy, every married couple should have a radio show, because you leave it outside.
That's a good point.
And you do your show, and then you get paid. And when you leave the show, because we were doing 6 hours at that time when we first started full time, and you leave the show and we'll be driving home, and I go, that's right, I was really upset with you last night before we got to work, but it's
and,
okay.
And we'd been driving in harumphing at each other, but the harumph was left at the door.
That's right. And then you realize 6-7 hours later, it really wasn't all that important, so move on.
Yeah.
So everybody should have a radio show.
Well, after 41 years, I think it's okay to call it a success. So.
Oh, thank you. Okay.
Well, one of the things we're going to do tonight, since coincidentally, oh boy, this is Valentine's Day.
Yes.
We're going to be talking with two of our favorite couples, one of whom we haven't talked with in years, If you, Ron, were you around Chicago in the mid-90s to mid-aughts?
No, I was out of town. I think I was in South Dakota during those years.
Mm-hmm. Okay, then you would not be familiar with John Duncanson and Sylvia Gomez.
No.
Married couple on Channel 2 on CBS News. Yeah. They were anchors. They anchored the weekend show. They met there.
Well, they met initially. They were working at Channel 32 and Channel 2,
right.
And they were working at competing radio station or competing TV stations, but they wound up covering the same things. And, well, we'll have them tell the story. And yeah. It's a wonderful story. They're
and
just
they
really cool.
They joined
people.
Us on many Valentine's nights because they were one of those rare couples that were working together at that time.
And then a little later tonight, we're going to talk with two of our friends from the Panhandle, Mike and Maggie McKinney. Their group is Lucky Mud, and they are just, they have a wonderful story of this.
She was a hitchhiking flower child, and he was military.
Yeah.
And he saw her through as I recall, through a fence where she was protesting outside the base and said, I'm going to marry that woman.
Sounds like Forrest Gump.
Yes, right.
When he got out of the military, he literally
followed her
all over the place.
Yes. It's a great story. And we're going to do something that we started last week. We said back in the day, you used to do something on the Big 89 called Love Jones.
And Love Jones was a huge record by a South Side of Chicago group called The Brighter Side of Darkness. The premise was, because along with doing a show during the week, I did a Saturday night show and Saturday night date night. So if you were going to be out on a date with that special someone and you had something that you wanted to say, but you weren't really comfortable saying it face to face, send me a Love Jones letter. I would read the letter and hopefully good things would happen.
And this is old school. I mean, you were opening up an envelope and reading a letter, handwritten letter.
Well, and my favorite story from that is, and this is absolutely true, I had a letter from a woman who was getting married, and she had some things she wanted to say to her new husband on her wedding night, but she wasn't sure she could say it, but could I say it? So she sends me the letter. I read it, and roughly an hour and a half later, I get a call on the request line, and I knew it was her because she said a couple things. She identified some things in the letter that I hadn't read on the air, and she was breathing heavily, and she said, I just wanted to thank you. I've had the best night of my life. Okay. So the point
you
of all
said
this
the is, bill. The bill will be forthcoming.
Yes. The point of all this is we thought we would do a spin on Love Jones tonight. If you would like to text us throughout the evening.
A message to someone. It could be some significant someone. It could be a spouse. I hope that is a significant someone. It could be your kids, a friend. So you
or someone that you're just going on a first date with,
sure.
or whatever.
Or you're wrapping up your evening with that someone. You can text us your message to that person. And later on tonight, in the 11:30 segment of the show, we're going to read your text.
So 312-981-7200. That's the Love Jones text line.
Yes.
312-981-7200.
So you can text and you need to tell us your first name and the name of the person that we're going to be sending out the message to, and we'll have great fun. When text first became available to the radio station, I remember the night we did New Year's Eve, and we said, you know what, if you want to share your New Year's messages with friends and family, text them to us. This is so much fun. We've got this new technology. We'll read them. And we had a proposal.
Yeah.
We had a guy propose, and she was listening, and she called us and said, I want to tell him I said yes. How do I tell him I said yes? And other than saying, you call him, we said, no, this is good radio. Hang on the line. We'll put you on the radio right now. So, and it was wonderful.
So 312-981-7200, if you have a Love Jones text, and we will just compile those texts and read them a little later tonight.
And it could be as simple as, Joe, this is Jane. You're swell.
Happy Valentine's Day.
That's right. It doesn't have to be complicated. So we'll have some fun with that. in the 11:30 segment. So if you send us a message and you want that special someone to hear that message, tell them they need to be listening to the radio. They should be listening anyway, but they should be tuned in specifically between 11:30 and 12 tonight, the end of Valentine's 2026. All right, Ron Brown in the newsroom.
Any Valentine's memory that stands out in your world, Ron?
Not really. I hate to be, you know, like that guy, but I'm just not that much of a Valentine's Day fan.
Really? You're not a romantic?
Well, I'm a romantic, and I think that's why, because this is like a fabricated, you know.
Stop it.
It is.
No, it's stop. Just, it's my second favorite holiday.
It's a Hallmark holiday. You know?
At least you're not as bad as Kathy O'Malley.
Yeah.
Did you see what Kathy put on her Facebook page?
What did she say?
Kathy has this picture of Cupid lying face down with an arrow in his back.
Ouch!
Yeah, I mean, I don't hate it. It's just I don't feel obligated to, express an emotion because the calendar says so. I'm that guy. So
This was always my dad's favorite holiday because he said this is the one holiday where you get to give something to someone just because. You want to. It's not a Christmas thing where you have to give something for everybody.
It's not a birthday thing. You decide, who do I want to? I think you deserve a little something. So. Well, I love it because I go into a blue funk post-Christmas. And there's that week or two that everything gets taken down and put away. And I'm like, and it's winter. And then all of a sudden I can decorate for Valentine's. And by the way, you can see all of our Valentine decorations on our Facebook page. And on our blog.
Yeah. In fact, please check out our blog because we're becoming less and less enamored of Mark Zuckerberg and his the way he's handling Facebook. So if you'd like to check out our blog, it's steveandjohnny.wordpress.com. We'd love it if you would subscribe. There is no cost, and we don't spam you. You just get a notification anytime we have a new blog post. And there's all of Johnny's Valentine tree pictures and decorations and some other things.
Recipes and all that good stuff, too. So the night is going to zip right by here, and we've got a full show. But coming up, we're going to be talking with John Davis from Motor Week, and we're going to get the rundown of the awards that Motor Week gives out every year. And then we're going to talk some love stuff with a couple of couples. And then it is, a listener wanted to know, is this Tom Appel's night? It is. Yeah. He'll join
Tom's
us at midnight.
He's going to be here a little later. And also Jill Simonello. Mm-hmm. His cohort at Car Stuff will join us with the 411 on the stuff you need to see at the final weekend of the Chicago Auto Show.
Yes, yes. And you are so Valentine-y that you said cohort. I like that. Cohort. I'm your cohort.
I like that.
We were lucky enough over the years to bring this information to you, so we can do it again tonight. We're talking the Motor Week Driver's Choice Awards, and the man who is the producer, the host, and the creator of Motor Week, the award-winning show that allowed us to watch him grow up on television. He is John Davis. How are you, John?
Hey, John.
Hey, Johnny. Hey, Steve. Thanks. It's just great to hear your voices in my ear again. I don't always get a chance to listen.
Well, so how many years have we watched you grow up on television?
45.
Really?
It's the 45th season, and it's been 48 years since we actually did the pilot.
That's amazing, John. So you are hands down the longest running original series dealing with cars on television, right?
Oh, yes. Yeah, we are. I think there isn't anybody else that really comes that close, certainly not on this side of the Atlantic. Top Gear would have given us a challenge if they had stuck around on the other side. But we're basically, I'm happy to say still going strong.
Yeah, well, congratulations, because that's very impressive.
And the blatant plug light has just gone off, so we should tell everybody to go to motorweek.org, And if you're listening to us outside the Chicago area, you can do a search and you can find out what PBS station mm-hmm. you'll be able to see Motor Week on.
And John, we were lucky enough to catch your episode dealing with the Driver's Choice Awards.
Oh,
and
good.
It just brought back memories of how you would run over from the auto show and you'd sit down with us at midnight and we'd have a little snack and then you'd lay the Driver's Choice Awards on us.
So, yeah, well, two things. I'd pretty much freeze to death trying to get from the hotel to the studios, but you always had some bakery that you had done that day.
Yes.
And, you know, that just kind of made it all worthwhile.
Well,
believe
it's the least we could do. So I was excited to see some of the cars that ended up on your Driver's Choice Awards this year. Should we start with the family car?
Yeah, because a lot of people don't realize that even though, you know, SUVs and pickup trucks are king, we're still have about 20 to 25% of the market are made up of what we call cars. And while the domestic manufacturers have pretty much vacated that area, the Europeans and the imports from Asia have not, and we were thrilled when Kia came up first with the K4 as a sedan, and then they're following that up with the K4 as a hatchback. And even though this is a compact car by class, it's so large, it really is a family car, and it pretty much ran away with our enthusiasm for best family car of the year. It's also a lot of fun to drive, and that's a key thing for us.
Well, it is one of the reasons that cars are still very popular over in Europe and other countries, that SUVs are more of an American thing, and smaller cars have been the norm over in Europe and some of the other countries.
A couple of years ago, I would have agreed with you 100%, and I think they still play a very big role there. But they've caught the SUV fever as well. It hasn't completely inundated the market like it has here.
I just think about crowded streets, and ours are crowded.
Yeah.
And for example, we were in our garage tonight, and I'm looking at the ceiling thinking, you know, there are certain vehicles you just couldn't drive into this garage. And over in Europe, there are certain roads you shouldn't be driving a big honking SUV on.
Yeah.
This is just too big.
You know, some of their roads are so narrow, it's really difficult to get two vehicles side by side of any size. But you're absolutely right. And you know what? When it comes to pulling a car into garages, home builders take note. You're not building the garages big enough for American taste, that's for sure.
Yeah. In fact, we said a little later tonight we're going to be talking with Jill Simonillo. And one of the things that she does is she always tests to see, will the vehicle she's driving fit in her garage?
Because she lives in the city of Chicago, and it's it's an old school, probably built like in the 20s when one car would pull into this garage, and she does some amazing things. I mean, I hold my breath. All right, let's go to Best Luxury Car, the Motor Week Award for the Best Luxury Car.
And this surprised a lot of people because we don't typically always look at Audi as a luxury brand, even though they clearly are. But their new A5 just embodied everything that we like in a driver's car and also managed to be a reasonably affordable luxury car as well. The A5 is just a very nice piece of work. It's not particularly flashy in any shape or form. But it was at the top of our list, and actually it was a unanimous vote by our staff.
Was that the one of a few vehicles that you had on the show that had the snow-white leather interior that just makes me cringe when I see it?
You know, it might have been. I honestly don't remember. But, yeah, every time we get this, we don't know why manufacturers send car testers white interiors. You know, it's like you're just asking for trouble because not everybody is quite as careful with these cars as they probably should be.
Well, John, it's not even
a test for families.
But if you're just wearing a new pair of blue jeans, that's it. You got a blue seat. You know? I'm speaking from experience having white sofas in our living room.
Audi also scored in the best sports sedan, didn't they?
They did. So they walked away with a twofer in the car area there, the S3, which is just a delightful vehicle. And it really has become the quintessential sports sedan. And that's something basically that we used to always look over at BMW for, and they still do great work. But the S3 seemed to just for value for the money and just fun for the miles. Easily was our winner this year.
Let's talk about the Dodge Charger, John.
That's a theme song.
And you're not going to catch them, Steve, I don't think, but not easily anyway.
That's an amazing vehicle. So we're going to roll through all of the categories because we've got like nine more to get to.
Right.
But we have to spend a few minutes talking about the Dodge because that is one impressive vehicle.
And you had way too much fun smoking those tires.
We did. And, you know, this is a repeat winner. Last year, the Charger Daytona, the all-electric muscle car, amazing automobile won. Mm-hmm. This year, same basic car, same chassis, same interior, same body, but now with a 550 horsepower twin turbo six. It's not a Hemi, but with all the sights and sounds of a muscle car, it's a remarkable achievement.
So the Dodge won, and this is the Dodge Charger, won your best sport coupe. And you can get that in four-door too, right?
You can as well. That's basically kind of like the icing on the cake.
That's crazy.
Hey, and both for the same profile. They really look almost the same.
Yeah.
And am I wrong, or you can get it electric or ice, either way?
Correct. You can get the Daytona starting in the mid-70s, or you can get the ICE version starting just around 50, which these days is about the average price of any new car.
Mm. Before we roll through the other Driver's Choice Awards, how many people actually vote on the vehicles that end up being the choice for the year?
It's our entire staff, and there's a staff of 10, and about five of the members join me on a special presentation where we talk about all the winners that's up on our website and also at our YouTube channel. And it's a nice half hour. You see what we really were thinking.
Mm-hmm. So the best performance car for this year?
Well, this is a horse of a different color and a different price. If you got a cool $150,000, it's the first Porsche 911. That is a hybrid. This is the Carrera GTS, and it's a performance hybrid, and it too is a remarkable engineering achievement, but it's still pure Porsche.
It's amazing. It's a gorgeous vehicle. It really is. So we go from a $150,000 car to the best small utility vehicle, and thank God we have
it. In the land, the Toyota RAV4, all new, basically, you know, primarily hybrid and plug-in hybrid models. But it's a winner for Toyota, and it's the reason you see so many on the road. Great size, great fuel economy, great utility. It's a real winner, and it's a winner for us.
And this is a case of where Toyota took a really, really good vehicle and made it even better.
And just tweaked it. They really listened to their owners.
So the best size, the best mid-size utility is one that I was like, yeah, sure. The Subaru Outback.
Well, you know, we used to call it a wagon for so long, but it's been morphing into this utility. You know, it's a little bit larger than a Forester. It makes sense for a growing family. And now it really looks like a utility, and they've done a great job with it. Still that same super reliable Subaru all-wheel drive and powertrain.
And hats off to Subaru for the commercials they've done in the past year. They've done some really terrific commercials.
And your best large utility is a vehicle that honestly didn't surprise me because we're seeing more and more and more of them, the Hyundai Palisade.
Well, the first generation sort of made everybody rethink what they were doing with three-row crossover utilities. I've actually got one of the first-generation vehicles myself, and I love it. The second one, again, much like the Outback, just tweaked here and there. Everything's just a little bit better. However, it will have, for the first time, a hybrid that gets well over 30 miles per gallon.
Ooh, that's nice. Yep. So now we go to the best luxury SUV.
Well, you know, here's another electrified vehicle, Mercedes-Benz GLC 350e. It's got almost 50 miles worth of plug-in electric range, yet it still gives you all the luxury that you expect from a Mercedes, and it's not too big. So it sort of fits the category perfectly.
Mm-hmm.
I have to tell you, when we get to best small truck, I was a little surprised only because as we talk with Tom Appel from Consumer Guide, and over the past year, the vehicles that have had the most recalls have come from Ford. Yeah. And I was pleasantly surprised to see the Ford Maverick get your Best Small Truck Award.
Well, you know, that really doesn't play too much of a factor into our judging. We are aware of it, but we're looking at utility and what you get for the money. And to Ford's credit, they've been stepping up very quickly when they find a problem. The Maverick, what really got it, and this is the second time it has won our Best Small Truck. Now they've got the hybrid version you can get with all-wheel drive, and they're having fun with it with the new Lobo, the lowered version, which really is a trick little truck.
The Lobo?
The Lobo.
That's a
it
great...
is exactly what it sounds like.
That's a great name.
So it's a slider that's low to the ground, and it's just a nice piece of work.
Now, the best full-size truck would be my fantasy vehicle. I mean, if I had the farm, I would have a reason other than just going to buy flowers once a year and using my pickup truck. But the Ram 1500 is an awesome vehicle.
It's an awesome vehicle, and they keep making it more livable. You know, it's come a long way. It's got the coil springs. It's got all the extra things like Ram box for storage. They keep looking at how to make this backbone of the American highway much more user-friendly and as much of a personal-use vehicle as a car used to be. Mm-hmm. And the new Ram just takes it again to another level. So it wasn't even a discussion in our group. It was a unanimous choice.
I was really pleased to see your best EV because a neighbor of ours has a Cadillac. Do we pronounce it Optic or Optiq?
Optiq.
What a cool-looking car.
You know, it's based on the same chassis as the Chevrolet Blazer EV, which won in this category as best EV last year. And of all the Cadillac EVs, and they've got them across the board now, we really like the Optiq the best. And it's also the smallest.
And a couple more ended up in that category, right, John?
Yes, we do three best EVs, the Nissan Leaf, new generation, much better looking vehicle than ever before. And now technically it's an SUV. I mean, that's what they call it, even though it looks very much like a hatchback. Mm-hmm. It's still one of the least expensive electric cars you can get. And they've upped the range now to well over 200, so it's competitive. And our last one is the Porsche Taycan. The all-electric Porsche hasn't been everybody's favorite, but we spent a lot of time on roads and racetracks with it, and it is a wonderful piece of machinery. I don't care what it's powered by.
Now, after we've gone through all of these, then we get to the best of the year. How did you, with all the vehicles you were testing, what were the parameters you were using to say, okay, this is the best of the year?
We talk about amongst our staff, we all basically go back and forth, and we're trying to pick a vehicle that best fits the moment in time for the automotive industry, has maybe technology that is far above everything else that we're considering. And for that, there was only one vehicle that we could pick, and I must say it's highly controversial. We've gotten a lot of pushback from our fans, but it's the Dodge Charger. Because you can get American muscle car, no matter whether you want an EV for, you know, you're thinking ahead, or you want to stick with ICE. And even in ICE, it's a highly advanced powertrain, twin turbo, six-cylinder. It's not the Hemi people want. Maybe that'll come later. But they did it with the same chassis, the same body, the same interior. There's very few automakers in the world that have been able to package both ICE and EV powertrains into the same vehicle. And I think it's notable that Stellantis and the Dodge brand have done that.
That's what I found fascinating, because as you say, wow, they kind of said, okay, how do you want it? Sure, we'll put it on in this frame and this chassis, and that's incredible.
It is incredible. Both vehicles, 0 to 60, you know, 3.3, 3.5, depending on which number you're looking at. The interior, if you're inside and with all the sound effects that they have manufactured for the EV, I know that's a heresy, I know it, but it's intoxicating. If you put someone in there and had them guess which vehicle they were in, a lot of people can't get it right. They really don't know if it's an EV or petrol. So, you know, they've just every little detail of this vehicle in all versions. They've been very attentive to. My hat's off to the engineers at Stellantis and Dodge. They just did a remarkable job. And both are all-wheel drive standard.
Are you ever tempted to put the pedal to the floor but turn off all the sound?
Yes, we do that all the time. There's not too many people that actually still test vehicles at racetracks with instrumented testing. We do, and believe me, our testers leave no stone unturned. And even with all the sound effects off, you're pushed back into your seat with the Daytona versus the EV, and it's a rocket ride. Well, only slightly slower in the Scat Pack V6.
So is there one in your garage now?
No. The garage is probably not big enough at the moment.
I see. Well, thank you.
I have to tell you, I'm tempted, because even if you don't go for the top Scat Pack, 400-plus horsepower for about $50,000 in a car that's likely to be a collector's item, that's a pretty good deal.
Well, thank you for continuing to do Motor Week, the longest-running original car show on television.
Everybody should watch it.
Absolutely, John. And thank you for joining us. It's just it's a warm fuzzy because it takes us back to the days on those very, very cold nights during the auto show.
Thanks, Johnny. Thanks, Steve. You guys are wonderful. Hope to see you same time next year.
Thank you. Take care. Bye-bye now.
Night.
Valentine's Day, as we've been mentioning, is special to us on a lot of levels. This marks our 41st year at this here radio station as a team.
Right.
And over the Valentine's Day shows that we've done, we have talked with some friends of ours that have a unique relationship, too, a kind of a special relationship.
Right. And we had the good fortune of inviting those folks into our show so that we could share what it's like to work with your significant other.
If you were in the Chicago area, from the, let's say, the mid-90s to the mid-aughts, and if you were watching either Channel 2 or Channel 32, you probably saw two of the best newscasters that this city has ever had the luxury of having.
And they became our friends, and we had them on our show on many Valentines, and we've tracked them down after many, many years of not having the opportunity to talk to them. And they are Sylvia Gomez and John Duncanson. And Sylvia and John, hi.
Hi.
Hey guys, I'm going to pass out after that introduction. I'm speechless.
I'm blushing.
But keep the propaganda moving, please. Keep going.
Well, I had
not to say anything else.
When I reached out to Sylvia, and she said, well, we haven't done this in a long time, meaning we haven't been on the radio talking about the fact that we're a working married couple. Now, you guys actually met each other.
You were working at different stations when you first met. Am I correct?
Correct. Sylvia was working at Channel 5. Yeah. I was working at Channel 2. There was a jailbreak at Cook County Jail, and we both showed up. And Sylvia was new in town, and I was probably about 7 or 8 months in. And it was honestly, it is Valentine's Day. You can say these things.
Sure.
It literally was love at first sight. So,
and now,
A couple of jokes first. Yeah. I have to say they landed. And then,
And you've been married 30 years now? Is that right?
Yeah, 30. We've been together for 30, oh my goodness. Let's see.
We
often forget, and if it weren't for our friend Dorothy Lefkowitz, we wouldn't even remember our anniversary because she always reminds us when it was that we met and married. So.
Now, when we met you guys,
we had two anniversaries.
You were actually a couple on Channel 2, and you were anchoring weekends, right?
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. We started as competitors back in 1992. And then in 94, I went to work for CBS where John already worked. Mm-hmm. And then we bounced around and then we ended up anchoring together. And pretty soon we were not only working together, we were anchoring together, we shared an office, then we got in a sailboat and we sailed together. So it's pretty much been 24/7. And despite how many people told us that was a relationship killer, mm-hmm. we're still hanging on.
So, how about it? Yeah. Still.
But boy, are you singing our song. Was there a point?
Right?
Yeah. Well, was there a point where
I have so many memories of just being in your studio and having the best conversations with the two of you. That was really always great.
We would get you in after midnight when you were exhausted, so the it was like you forget you're on the radio and you just, you know, you'd spill your guts and
was there a point in your relationship where it went from boy, I'm really attracted to this person to beyond that, oh boy, are we kindred spirits?
Well, it was actually immediate and
pretty immediate,
but it was hidden. It was hidden from everyone for maybe even an hour, at least. And a producer at Channel 5 got the word that we were hanging out together when a garbage man who, you know, people have sources everywhere. Her source was the garbage man at 5 a.m. saw me coming out of her her apartment. Yeah.
Down
on Illinois, I think, right? Illinois and the lake. And
that's
Lake
Chicago. Right. That's right.
Yeah, so then the secret slowly kind of eked out. But we kept it under wraps. And, good question. We used to be on stories together, and if I got a call or Sylvia got a call, like, in the middle of the night, the other one couldn't move. That was the deal.
Yeah.
You couldn't.
Yeah.
It was a scoop, and you knew about it, but you couldn't act on it.
Ooh.
And
and you
it
just
hurt.
Hope
it hurt
like
on
that.
Both sides, actually.
And
you hoped like heck that you weren't the reporter at your station assigned to it, because you already knew you were behind the eight ball, right? Either he got the head start or I did. But I have to backtrack for just a moment, because, and John always rolls his eyes when I do this, but it was love at first sight when we actually caught sight of each other. But we actually almost met the day before on a story up in Evanston, a big gangbanger story, and I was super late. And I crashed into this news conference, and I ruined everybody's shot, and I was a disaster.
She was the new kid.
And John was like, yeah. And I was terrified that if I missed anything, I was going to get fired. And I'd been there for like 2 weeks. And mm-hmm. and John was like, who is this kid? She doesn't know what she's doing. What a hot mess she is. and then I was trying to recover some information. I'm interviewing the police officer who was heading the news conference, and I was just trying to catch up what I'd missed. And then I felt this presence behind me, this giant shadow, and it was John, in hindsight, I realized. But I was like, this guy is so rude that he's hovering over me. I'm going to make him wait. And I made him wait for, like, I don't know, 10 or 15 minutes. And I had no more questions to ask, but I just wasn't going to let this reporter take my interview. So I just tried to stick a needle in his thigh here, and he thought I didn't know what I was doing. And I was deliberately
really non-story.
It was a non-story.
There was no reason for her to even be talking to the guy, or me either. I mean, it wasn't a big deal, and she kept going on and on and on. I'm like, I just want to get out of here, please.
Oh, that's a good one.
Trying to
thwart
him, you know.
It was rather irritating. Yeah,
we're talking with John Duncan and Sylvia Gomez, and I said that you guys walked away from television, which just, I think, it blew the industry's mind. We all went, what? And then we found out you were going to get on a boat, and you were just going to sail, and you're just going to go around the world, right? So, Sylvia, you take it from there. You made this decision to, as I recall, you sold everything, right?
We did. And we called whatever family was within driving distance, and they all came and took what we didn't sell. So we're like, okay, everybody get stuff.
Yeah.
And it was pretty amazing. You know what was the best part about it? I mean, obviously the adventure was amazing, but we did get a tremendous amount of feedback from folks who were not just shocked that we were quitting really great jobs, but people who saw our story and went, oh my goodness, you can do this?
Mm-hmm.
You can just leave? You can go and follow a dream? And people stopped us in the streets. They stopped us in stores. They stopped us in restaurants. And everybody wanted to know how to do it. And it was pretty scary, but it was also very exciting and tremendously fulfilling. We had such a wonderful adventure. Turns out sailing was a little bit slower than we thought it would be, but it was still full of incredible adventure.
And you decided...
catching John's first fish was pretty astounding.
And you stuck with this for 6 years, living on, what was it, a 42-foot sloop?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a beautiful 42-foot Saber. We call her Aviana. And,
which we still have.
That's right. We still have her. She's what does they say, hard road and put up wet, but she's come out of it and she's doing well. And she's in the San Francisco Bay right now.
Wow.
And this was literally just the two of you, no crew, no nothing, just the two of you and the middle of the water, and there you go.
So, John, what happened when you found out that your wife was pregnant and you're living on a boat?
Oh, you can do anything anywhere, and people do, so we did. So that's the short.
That's the mantra. You can do anything.
That's really how we approached everything. But, we were in Chicago twice. So the first time, this is the culmination of the first, 5 years. And we were in Belmont Harbor one day, on the green there, and watching the sailboats go out in April or May. And we went, God, we should try that. And we bought a little one, and then we bought a bigger one with the one that we're talking about. And one day we just went, this thing could go around the world, so we need to give that a try. And we were, at the time, we weren't like super young, but we were young enough to go, you know what, if this doesn't work out, I'll bet, we could beg and claw and, get on our knees and, try to get a job again and try this again and keep going. So in a way, there was that safety net of going, well, you're still... Yeah. Viable in a business it's about youth, kind of, in a way.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And yeah. So then we did it, we did it. So and we spent five and a half years away from Chicago, and we took planes, trains, buses, took the sailboat. We made it around the world and plus, and the experiences were fantastic. Our son was born, when we brought him back to Chicago, he was pretty, pretty young, and we were back again for another 5 years, basically.
Well, did you ever think though, at the point when you realized that you were going to have a baby, that maybe we should just call it quits and just go back to the to terra firma?
there was definitely a moment where we both went, Oh my, this was kind of not what we planned.
Mm-hmm.
But, and we were in denial for a very long time, and we didn't tell anybody, just like we didn't tell anybody that we were dating. We didn't tell anybody that we were pregnant for a very long time. And we were in such denial.
Wouldn't admit it.
Or ourselves. We did not buy, Steve and Johnny, we did not buy a single thing for the baby until he was born. He didn't have a crib. We didn't have diapers. We had nothing. We gave birth, or I guess I did.
I brought in the Thai food.
Yeah, exactly right. And we were in San Francisco, where John's brother lived at the time, and we came back because I was a little nervous about having a baby. Where you'd think in the third world I would have felt fine because everybody knows how to have children there, but I was a little bit nervous. And we went back to San Francisco, and I gave birth there. And the day he was, our kid did not have a name for 3 days because we didn't know what to name him, and we hadn't prepared. And he didn't have it. Like I said, he didn't have a crib. We bought a hammock that we had traveled with.
Yeah, he grew up in a hammock, and on a boat, always rocking.
Yeah,
it's right.
Back and forth and back. So if you hang a hammock throughout the center of the cabin, it stays stable.
There's
while
no
the
rocket.
Boat's going side to side.
Yes.
So he just kind
it was,
of
it was, it,
softly
it,
bounced.
It was a gimbal, a natural gimbal. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
As if a third parent were slowly, you know, kind of like lifting him up and down. So, it was good.
And he,
he's a fine young man.
How old is he now?
He is 23.
He's 23, and believe it or not, in November, he bought a one-way ticket to Southeast Asia, and now he's getting job interviews, so he may be coming back, but he's been there ever since. So that apple didn't fall far.
Yeah, the wanderlust.
It's rich.
Have you guys ever thought about doing a book?
You know, so many people have said it, but I don't know.
She's laughing at you, John.
At me, not with me. That's the beautiful thing. But a lot of people have said it because there've been a lot of things that have been very interesting in our lives, and just crazy stuff. But I don't know. I mean, for me, I'm not done doing it. So. Be hard to do that, and I think today, I don't know, the competition for ideas, and this is a cop-out, I realize that, but the competition for ideas is so great, and AI is coming up and all that stuff, mm-hmm. I think there's always someone who could come up with something better, but I do agree with you, and that is my sentiment, and that's my heartfelt feeling, having covered wars and gone in a million different ways. And have had lunch with Trump, Obama, and Biden, and war criminals. So it's like, there's a whole series of things that could be woven in there. I don't know where to start, and B, I kind of just told you. It's like I don't know what the market would be and how interesting that would be for somebody else.
But the story you two have is so cool.
Yes,
and
it is.
So I vote for a book, and I'll buy the first copy. And guys, I'm going to say this. It's going to sound very, very corny. I hope you will take it the way I mean it. We miss you guys. It is so good to talk to you two.
It is.
Do you ever get
to do this sometime when we're off the air?
do you ever get back to Chicago?
Occasionally,
we do now and again.
Years now.
Yeah.
Well,
now
I miss it so.
When you ran away from home on the boat, you did that for 6 years, and now you hang your hat in California and Mexico?
Yeah, we're in Mexico right now and have been for the last couple of months. Thought we would go for a short time and then, just kind of put it off. And so we're still here.
You know what? Life is nice when you can just say, we like Mexico. We're going to stay a while longer. And then months pass and you're still in Mexico.
If people want to follow you, is there a specific website or anything that they should point their browsers to? Or how could they follow you?
And now you stumped me. We started our own company for a time in 2007. And so really that's kind of our website, but I don't know that there's a personal one. Well, we have our company there and people can always reach us there if they need to reach out. Quite open and love to hear from people.
Mm-hmm. And your company is the same name as your boat, Aviana, right? Aviana Productions.
That is correct. It's avianaproductions.com. We're still doing storytelling and we're doing it that way, just different from the news life that we had. Mm-hmm. And we are blessed that we have had a great run, both with our clients and with our personal lives. John mentioned our son Spike. He's doing great in Thailand right now. No, he's in Malaysia right now, and we're in Mexico. And somehow we make it all work.
His name is Ian, Sylvia.
I know.
You know, it was funny when I read your son's name was Ian. I thought
you named your son Spike.
That's exactly what I said. Wait a minute, your son's name is Spike, and that just seems so fitting that you would name your kid Spike.
Honestly, I think if you looked at us, and this is the thing, we can fit in anywhere, and so you could actually take us to any dinner, and we'd pass. But on the other hand, we named our kid Spike. But just to give him a backup, his real name is Ian. So, you know, so that's, you know. But in terms of following, you know what? Here's the thing. I mean, everybody follows everybody today. My own feeling personally on this is, you know, I love you guys. And I remember I have the greatest feelings of your enders.
Oh, my gosh.
Coming in at or right up to New Year's and talking about the news of the year in Chicago. But I don't feel the need. And we're still doing really cool and really amazing stuff in my mind, as much as we ever have. And so, but I don't feel the need necessarily, other than a few Facebook posts here and there, to say, hey, you need to know what we're doing all the time.
Gotcha.
Because,
yeah.
Honestly, the world is, I don't know. I just kind of feel that everyone has a great life, and it needs to be celebrated, and you don't need to celebrate mine. And so it is. And I celebrate her. She is the most amazing person I've ever met, and you guys are. I love the relationship you guys have. It is Valentine's Day.
He's always been such role models.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, and yeah, it's been, you know, just, you know, that kind of you know, meeting and greeting and talking and sharing.
Well, you're people.
I remember the stories we used to have. Yeah,
sure.
Yeah.
And
I have to ask.
Thanks for saying that, and thanks for the interest. That's wonderful.
I have to ask, you guys are in Mexico now. When we last saw you, it was sadly on Channel 2 with the horrible fires out on the West Coast.
Did that have
anything to do with why you decided to split from the West Coast and head down to Mexico? I mean, that was a horrible time, and obviously you did terrific reporting, but what an awful thing to go through.
It was terrible. It was an awful time. We still haven't left it, though. We still have our home there. Those fires got obviously really close to us within 10 miles or so. But we were very fortunate. We didn't suffer the way many others did. In fact, John's brother lost their home. He and his wife lost their homestead there. And that was hard. And there were so many people who suffered greatly, but we were blessed and didn't lose our homes. We still love it there. Our boat Aviana is still in the San Francisco Bay. We have a little cabin just across the Golden Gate Bridge in Marin County there that we adore. But I hesitate to say this, especially to folks in Chicago who are dealing with, you know, sub-zero winter. We've gotten soft. We can't handle it. In the words of Jack Nicholson, we can't handle it. We even beautiful San Francisco gets weather, and we've had a lot of rain, and we left in November just before the rain started, and every time we thought about going back to San Francisco, we'd see that we had an atmospheric bomb or another big rainstorm. So my blood can't handle anything below 65 now and anything above 85. So we've gotten soft, but we go back and forth between the two, and we're very lucky to be able to do that. By the way, you guys mentioned a book, and we haven't had the strength or the confidence to do that, but I know you guys have done that.
Mm-hmm.
So when we decide to finally put pen to paper, you might get a call from us on some advice.
Okay.
Well, I'll just tell you this. The best thing to do is to say, you take this chapter, I'll take this one, I'll meet you in the middle. I would go to one part of the house, he'd go to the other, and we'd meet in the kitchen, and then we'd share notes. And
I like that.
It worked.
It actually took a couple of years.
Yeah, because it was one of those, we figured eventually we'd get around to it, and we were not working full-time here at the radio station at that time, and then they wooed us back. And in fact, that leads me to my next question.
With
things that are happening in the world, do you ever find that little tickle where you think, wow, I would love to dive into this as a reporter. I would love to tell this story. Does that happen to you, or do you just kind of steer away from the news and just live this good, pleasant, healthy life?
John, I'll let you start, because we actually, I think, might have different answers on this one.
Sure. I wouldn't want to be honestly, and honest, to be honest, my focus often was on more international stories, and I was lucky yeah. as a local reporter often, and I worked for the network. Sylvia and I both did for a while, but was always on international stories. So, you know, I worked for Time Magazine and United Press International in Central America, covering the wars there. I worked as a local TV reporter in California at a time when they had no problem. The budgets were great, and you know, ran after Pablo Escobar in Colombia, and I went to Bosnia four times. Did the tsunami in Indonesia, and those are the things that I really miss internationally. I honestly wouldn't want to be covering domestic politics right now, and not for any side, but it's you know I that would be tiring for me.
Yeah,
and maybe it's I'm not old in my mind, and I don't feel old, but I don't that's not it doesn't really interest me. So
you don't get that
along
tickle
that line. No. No, but Sylvia and I have done some things. I mean, we were in Sinaloa, Mexico, doing for our company when we were making films and doing things. And Sinaloa was is still one of the snakeheads of the Mexican cartels. And so it was crazy. It was like we were in a war zone, and going from place to place and filming and things like that. And so in a way, some of that still goes on. When we travel internationally, I'm always, you know, it's wonderful to talk to people about politics and for me,
so you
stories.
You can scratch your itch when it sneaks up on you. You know, you kind of reach out. Next thing you know, yeah, I'm good. I can move on now. But Sylvia, do you agree with him? I mean, do you find yourself kind of thinking, gee, I'd love to sink my teeth into this story, and I know I could do a good job?
Or not so much?
Well, I think a little bit of both. And John and I actually have had this discussion a number of times, because I do miss being in the thick of things, right? I miss having the scoop. I miss having knowledge that other people maybe don't, and that might, you know, be the wrong way of looking at it. But I really do love digging into something, and so I find other things to dig into. And to John's point, I think during our travels, we have made sure that we have found ways to see the world and see what's going on the ground in different ways. I mean, we're not the type of people who travel and just go do the museums and the common tourist sites. Not that there's anything wrong with that, but that's just not our style. So we go the back roads, and we find the deeper things and the deeper places and the deeper thoughts, and we get into people's homes, and that still does scratch that itch, Johnny, as you said. But there are times when stuff is happening, and I really do love politics, so I do sometimes miss being in it. That said, the way things are right now are so ugly and so contentious that it bothers me. And I don't know that I could handle it. You know, being a reporter and being an anchor is super rewarding in many, many ways. And I do believe it's a noble calling, but it is incredibly stressful.
Yeah.
The deadlines, the multiple deadlines daily, took a toll on the both of us.
Yeah.
I think when we quit, you know, there are sleep issues. I think I was probably 15 pounds lighter than I am now. And you know, so you're not eating well, you're running, you're not sleeping. So there's a tremendous amount of stress to that job. But it is, I hope still for the folks in it, that it is still rewarding.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't think we could do it anymore, but I do sometimes miss it very much.
As we cover their life, because this is your lives, it's Valentine's Day. What's your song?
Ooh.
Ooh.
Yeah. And if you don't have one, you have to hang up and find one and say, that's our song.
We can't even remember our anniversary, guys.
That's right. When I said you've been married 30 years, I could just hear that. Oh, the wheels turned. You're like, oh, we have been married 30 years.
Well, see, we actually have several anniversaries, and yesterday, we Friday the 13th, was one of them. And because we met on Friday the 13th, we got married on Friday the 13th. We were told by doctors we conceived on Friday the 13th.
Really?
And so, so then when we met was pretty much when we kind of instantly fell in love. So what's the anniversary? Is it that day or is it the day that you finally went, and literally, okay, this is true to form. We one day went, what do you want to do today? And I said to Sylvia, well, we could get married. And, you know, in Chicago at the time, and they may still, but just like as if you were to buy a gun, they have a cooling off period. Mm-hmm. And I kind of knew that. And I went, it'll never happen. That's perfect. And Sylvia went, got a judge to sign off on it. We took a cab to Saks. A bunch of people dressed Sylvia in a dress. Went to David Orr's office. At the time, he was the clerk of Cook County.
County clerk.
Right. He married us right there, in City Hall. So that was another day that could be an anniversary. So
we've
been together, I don't know how long, and we've been married, I don't know how long.
I have to ask Sylvia.
30 years.
Did you pull strings to get the judge to sign off on the marriage license?
Did I mention when you asked me if I missed things from reporting, having the connection and having the Rolodex to say, hey, I know John just threw this bone at me and he doesn't think I can pull it off, but I'm telling you, I'm a Gomez and we do not know no. So.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
Well, you know what?
And the adrenaline was still pumping through your veins, so you had that. You had that going.
It made the job in broadcasting with all the stress worthwhile. Bottom line, it made it worthwhile.
Exactly.
Yes,
it did.
Exactly.
So,
John, I never missed a deadline, Johnny, and that wasn't going to be one that day. So.
John, I hate to tell you this, but you have a big birthday coming up. In March?
Oh, my God.
Oh, yeah, right?
How did you know that?
Having just walked down that path for the very same birthday, I'm here for you to tell you, you think it's easy and it rolls right off your back, and then you realize, wait, 70? What?
Oh, man, that hurts.
I'm fighting every second, and it's okay, honestly. So, yeah,
but John,
it's all good.
I think Sylvia just realized you'll be 70 by the tone of her voice. She was like, oh, yeah, oh.
Really? Well, Johnny, thanks a lot. Appreciate you.
I'm here for you. And
now
I think.
In my,
go ahead.
He's still 36 and I'm still 27, right?
Well, that's what I've been telling her.
That's where we'll hold it.
That's sweet.
You know, Johnny, actually we are, and I remember back, all those years ago when we were together, and I remember when, Steve, you were first diagnosed, and you guys went through that whole trying to figure out what was wrong and how scary it was.
Yep.
Well, we didn't have a situation exactly like that, but I want to say about 4 years ago now, actually, it was on my birthday, John had a catastrophic bicycle accident.
Oh, yeah.
And broke 15 bones from, his chest up. And he somehow survived it. We pulled him out of a ditch and we walked home, and then we got him to the hospital, and he had 6 broken bones in his back and his neck.
His scapula,
his chest, his heart moved to the left, Johnny. His heart moved to the left.
Wow.
So,
But here's the thing. So this is like, you get to be 70, and that's what you want to talk about, right? But, and I do appreciate I'm saying that with tongue-in-cheek, by the way.
It's bowel movements, John. It's bowel movements.
Amen.
I'll tell you that. I mean, that was a great, not that I wasn't, because I always worked out, and I was always in good shape and stuff like that, but that was a great wake-up call, because, I mean, that was the Christopher Reeve moment, honestly, and I had a number of doctors just say, you should be dead. And but then it was about working yourself back to not only a normal situation, but better than before.
Right.
And so to your point, Johnny, I am better than I was 4 years ago. And every day I work out, I'm strong. I get muscle that I didn't have then.
Mm-hmm.
And so honestly, better now than I was then, with a great deal of kind of I have some perspective that I didn't have then as well, for months being in kind of a body cast, just looking up at the blue sky and going, huh. But I was never bored. That was the fascinating thing. And so I'm grateful, and but I'm not overly, I don't look at it and I don't think about it every day and go, oh, you know, look at this or that. Or every day to me is a new day, and I've always kind of been that way. And, you know, I think, it's a little different, I think, than our parents' or our grandparents' generation, where that particular age, by that time, you were getting ready to be put away.
But also,
I think that's the case now, honestly.
Also, I bet you had the same realization that I did. Oh, boy.
Sure.
Did you get lucky and marry the right person?
Definitely. Yeah.
Well,
seriously, on
that note, I'm going to say thank you guys for letting us catch up with you. It's really a treat. And you know what? You sound wonderful. And I hope we can do this again. We don't have to wait like 10 years to find out what's going on in your life.
I think that would be nice.
Well, good, good.
That would be nice. And congratulations to the two of you, too.
Happy anniversary to you guys.
41 years. Oh, happy anniversary.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
That's amazing.
Well, be good to each other and stay well and stay in touch, okay?
Will do. Please, you too. The phone works both ways, so we'd love to hear from you as well.
Thank you, Sylvia, and thank you, John. Take care.
Have a great night, guys.
Sure.
Good night.
They are
sweet,
two
people.
Really special people.
And you know what? They kind of underestimate the significance of walking away from a really amazing job and getting on a boat for 6 years. I'm like, whoa, that blows my mind.
And we're going to introduce you to, or reintroduce you to, two additionally very special people.
Yeah. Lucky Mud are our friends from the Panhandle of Florida.
You've heard them on the show before.
Yes. Maggie and Mike McKinney, and that chortling was Mike, not Maggie. Hey, you guys.
How are you? I was just thinking maybe we should be committed.
Well, we love your story. When we said we're going to spend some time on Valentine's night talking about people who work together who happen to be committed forever, you came to mind right away because you guys have been married for how long?
Almost 54 years. Yeah.
Wow. Wow.
it's the same story for you guys, too. I mean, you work together.
Yeah.
You've been together for a long time. There's not a whole lot of us, I guess.
No, they're not. And there are still people that will roll their eyes and go, I could never do that. I love him, but I couldn't be with him 24/7. And you guys live on this lovely little piece of land in Florida. You are traveling around the world thanks to your music. But you are together 24/7, and you also write music together as well as performing it together. Do you ever find when people roll their eyes, they don't get it? They don't understand that this is all I know. This is the way it has to be.
Well, you know, it's funny. We do kind of, and sometimes I honestly have just exactly the opposite thing about people who spend totally separate lives. And, you know, I mean, they come together maybe for dinner or whatever. I don't understand that, you know. So maybe it's just who we are, you know. Maybe it's just, I don't know. I think it's great. It works for us.
Yeah, yeah.
Happy Valentine's Day. We miss you guys.
Oh, thank you.
Back at you. We miss you, too.
We're going to see you in a couple weeks as we're going to be down there.
Yeah. But for people who are new to our conversations, let's take it back to the beginning.
Yes.
How and where did you two first meet, and then how did the relationship progress? So how and where did you first meet?
Okay. I was stationed at Tyndall Air Force Base during Vietnam. And in 1969, I met this 16-year-old girl who was leading the anti-war rallies on the marina.
Now, you're military, and she's an anti-war protester.
But soldiers don't like war.
We
met over poetry and music and stuff.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, we shared the same, you know, I was an activist because my cousin had gotten killed in Vietnam when I was 13, and I thought, you know, I don't understand what's going on here. Tell me, you know, give me a good reason why this is happening. So So I met Michael, and we are politics and music and poetry, and we were just like best friends from the very beginning.
But as I recall, you didn't commit to each other, because didn't he have to go looking for you when he got out of the service?
Yep. we were friends. We met over, we loved each other, and we loved each other over poetry, mm-hmm, and music.
So when Michael got out of the military, I, of course, stayed here and went, you know, graduated and continued to do all of my different things. And then I left here, and remember, this was 1971, mm-hmm, and I hitchhiked from here to Mexico because I wanted to go to the Yucatan. I wanted to see Chichen Itza. And so my sister and I hitchhiked to Mexico and took buses down through Mexico, came back home, and we came through New Orleans, and I just loved New Orleans. So I moved to New Orleans, and I was a flower vendor on the street corner. And
I hitchhiked back from Denver, and I found her.
Yeah, he was.
I love that.
Did you know that he was going to hitchhike and come back and try to find you?
I did not. I actually had gone and applied for a job at the University of Illinois in Bloomington.
Oh.
As a camp counselor for in the Catskills. And I had gotten the job, and I came back to New Orleans and packed my stuff. I was going to head back to Tallahassee.
And then I showed up.
and my dad was coming to help me move, and Michael came back just in time to ride with him to New Orleans. And then it just worked. And we were, yep, a couple of months later, we got married. So
when you got married, did you decide then that with your love of poetry and music, that music would be your life, your livelihood?
Yeah. And it's funny, you know, it was, and it wasn't. We got married, and Michael was the songwriter at the time, mm-hmm, and I wrote poetry, and we started playing music together, but we held regular jobs because we thought, you know, we really want to do what we want to do. And we wound up in Nashville by a huge mistake.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, we've been playing music ever since, and we're
still writing songs. We're still having a great time musically.
Yeah.
Well, Maggie, when you were in Nashville, didn't you work with Ronnie Millsap?
I did. I did. I worked for him for 3 years, mm-hmm, and as personal secretary for him and the business manager. And to be honest, I realized that that life wasn't really for us, because it was very difficult to stay together, for couples to stay together, because you had to sort of be single-minded about what you were doing, and mm-hmm, it wasn't what we wanted. We wanted, mm-hmm, to stay together, and we wanted to build a life together, and we both wanted to be songwriters. We didn't want to be performers. We wanted to be songwriters.
By the way, Steve, that's a great new guitar you have.
Oh, yeah. I'm glad you like it.
Yes, Mike, yeah, you know your way around a guitar, and some really swell guitars too.
Yeah, we have a lot.
Well, let me take you back to Nashville though. Mike, did you attempt to do writing while you were in Nashville? Because they write differently. We know a lot of songwriters that say you got to get together with other songwriters, and it's like writing by committee when you're in Nashville and that's your job. Did you give that a whirl too?
No, I didn't. I carried my music on Music Row. I got to be good friends with Waylon's brother, Tommy Jennings, mm-hmm, and other people, and we just sat around and talked about music, but we didn't try to sell music, okay?
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't good at that part of it. I loved the people, but I didn't love the business.
Yeah, so yeah, then you decided to head back to Florida and yeah, said, you know what, this feels like home.
When our daughter was born, we thought, we can't raise her here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So we moved back to Florida.
And to be honest, you know, the business is its own particular beast. You know, it sort of takes over your life. And we just wanted to stay together and write songs and play music and do what we wanted to do.
It's nothing against the music business.
No. It's just a business. It's what it is.
It's just the way it is. Yeah.
But that's what a lot of people don't understand, that it is not just music. It is the business of music. And that takes precedence for whether you think that's a good or a bad thing. It takes precedence in Nashville and in a lot of places.
When you're in love with when you're in love with somebody, there are bad days. No.
So are you going to tell us about one?
We were touring in Ireland one year, and Maggie and I were staying in a big house in Westport, Ireland, and we had this conversation that was so loud that the sheep ran across the pasture to the other side. And
it was his fault.
It's always my fault, but both of us were in different sides of the same big house, and I thought, I got to get her back over here with me, so I wrote that song.
Oh, that's sweet. Well, I love the fact that you guys called your music Swampy Tonk, not Honky Tonk, but Swampy Tonk or Folkabilly.
And everybody should go to LuckyMudMusic.com. That's the website, LuckyMudMusic.com.
So where's your music going to take you this year?
Well, we're probably going to be back in Montana. You'll love this. We don't really go to church because we just don't. But we're doing a service tomorrow at the Unitarian Universalist Church here in Panama City. Mm-hmm. Because we like once a year they ask us to come in and do a little thing. So it's on resilience and serendipity.
Ooh.
Okay.
Wow.
And serendipity is our God.
Wow, that's kind of two very different things.
They kind of fit together. Well, they have for us. It's going through the trouble, hit a bounce and hit a bump in the
roll
road.
With it.
Yeah,
you're right.
And then be open to the possibilities of things that come along and that are totally different.
And trust your own self.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I think our whole lives we've sort of been, I think that's our strength, is that we've been able to hit bumps and then just change directions if we have to and be open to whatever possibility comes along.
We've had a great season. We've played in Pennsylvania, in a beautiful place in Pennsylvania. Mm-hmm. We played three shows in North Georgia, so it's been a good year for us.
We're going back to Montana in August. They have the Cowboy Poetry and Western Music Festival out there.
So. We can yodel the cowboys and they get it.
Yes.
Well, Mike, I suspect when they see you, they think you just walked off of a Hollywood set. And when they're talking cowboys, they're like, this is a cowboy right here, this Mike McKinney dude. and Maggie is forever a flower child. She's my bohemian flower child.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, it's funny because Florida, you know, was like the premier cattle producer for many, many years. My family were all cattle people. And so
we tell people Maggie's family raised cattle and my family stole cattle.
Okay. But, so you're covering both ends of the spectrum.
Yes.
Yeah, that's right.
Are you guys still writing music?
Oh, God, yeah.
Really? You got stories you have to tell.
Oh, my God. We're so crazy. It's funny. We have at least over 300 songs. And Michael came up with this brilliant idea about making a songbook with our songs. And we've been the last probably about a month, we've been working on this song, the first volume one of 100 songs.
What?
Typing them all up and getting them all the chords. It's
cool.
It's interesting.
That's brilliant. And
you know, the funny thing is you forget, you know, we love lyrics. We're lyric people. Mm-hmm. And we love... You know, Michael's a storyteller.
Yeah.
I'm more like the emotional writer.
Right. And Michael is a successful author, too. And people can find him on Amazon by looking up Mike McKinney.
Absolutely. But we're rereading our songs, and it's fascinating, you know. Mm-hmm. It's, I don't know, it's kind of nice.
It's kind of cathartic, too.
We want to leave a legacy to our daughter and let her know that what we've done.
That's very cool. Well, we're going to let you go so that you can get some rest and get ready for that service tomorrow. But before you go, I have to ask you, do you buy into that never go to bed angry with each other?
No.
No.
Okay.
I have to agree with you, because sometimes okay. you just need to sleep on it, right?
Sometimes it's best just to, you know.
We've been married over 53 years. That's more than most people have been alive.
I hear you. So, but people will say, well, never go to bed angry. And I'm like, sometimes you have to. You have to.
Sometimes, you know. Sometimes it's best to do that.
You need to curl up and, you know, pull the covers up over your ears and say, tomorrow will be better. I know
that's
it will
exactly.
be.
And that's why God made whiskey. Okay.
That's why God made whiskey. Okay.
I think one of the key things is find out what works for you two and do that.
Okay. Yeah.
That's right.
That's exactly right. And most importantly, you know, honestly, never give up.
Right. Amen to that. Yeah.
You know what? We love you guys.
Yeah.
Well, back at you.
Happy Valentine's Day.
Well, same to you. And we look forward to seeing you in a couple of weeks. We're going to finally sit down and break bread together.
Oh, God. That'd be fabulous.
That would be so fun.
We love you guys.
You take care, you guys. Happy Valentine's Day. Good night.
To you. Night. Bye, everybody.
Bye-bye.
That's Mike and Maggie McKinney, and they are two extraordinary people. The website is luckymudmusic.com. We love that. We didn't even get to, of course, we've talked about this in previous shows, but they have a farm.
Mm-hmm.
And on their farm, they have a part of the farm that has been made into a stage. And on Sundays, they will have concerts. And sometimes it's just bring your own instruments and whatever.
And your dog.
Yeah, and your dog.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they are just two of the nicest people.
Maggie's Musical Farm.
Yeah.
Yeah. It sounds like a movie. I mean, and seriously, you have to check out the pictures of them, because Mike is a cowboy. I know when they're in Montana, people think he's wearing a costume. He's trying to be a cowboy. No, that's really him. And the sweetest people in the world. And we just love their story. We wanted to share that with you on Valentine's Day. Coming up.
And I just realized that when we're down in Florida, I'm going to see if I can get Mike to work on that song that I've been working on for years.
Literally years.
If you're just tuning in, we explained earlier that years ago on the Once Big 89, it was on Saturday nights, I used to do exactly what we're doing right now and use the Brighter Side of Darkness's version of Love Jones, which was a hit song, as an introduction to reading letters that had been sent in during the previous week from people who were going to be out on a date or whatever, and they didn't know that they'd be able to say to the person's face what they wanted to say. So they would send me the letter, and I'd read the letter on the air.
Did you get a lot of mail?
Oh, yeah.
I bet.
Had a ton of mail.
That's crazy. So you'd have to kind of go through it and see what was suitable for the radio?
Well, and full disclosure, I used to have a lot of fun with it, and I had some drop-ins, suggestive drop-ins that I might use at different points as I'd be reading these things.
Because it was a Saturday night.
And all of a sudden you'd hear David Bowie singing Wham Bam Thank You Ma'am. And
or a little pillow talk with Sylvia.
Oh, yeah.
A little oohing and aahing.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So we have a ton of texts that have come in tonight from people who just wanted to say something to or about somebody special.
I'm a softie, I tell you. I can stand in the Hallmark card department and start crying. That's me. And there are certain television shows I don't watch because I know I'm going to be a mess watching them, because I'm a hopeless romantic. And when I'm looking at some of these texts, I'm like, oh, I just want to reach out there and hug you guys. It's so sweet. So thank you.
Okay. I'll start?
Yes.
Okay. This is from an 847 area code. Happy Valentine's Day, Bob in Arlington Heights. Happy that Sherry is still my Valentine. Bob is sorry he didn't call you for 17 months. But 32 years later, Sherry, I'm glad you took the call. We'll love you forever.
Glad she took the call, too. Oh, man. Look at me. That's just one of them.
And we just started.
I'm already teary. 608 area code, Mary Lynn. 48 years ago tonight, we had our first date at the Golf Mill Theater to see Saturday Night Live. Even though we've been divorced for the last 25 years, I still miss you, Jim.
From 708. Cindy in heaven. I remember the Wednesday our eyes first touched. The day in Paris you said yes. The Saturday you promised forever. I remember the Sunday my kiss couldn't save you, steal you from that fate. And then there is something that is apparently in French that I don't want to mispronounce. But then they say, you have my heart, my whole life.
You have my heart, whole life. Mm. Steve, you better get working on your text. I need a text. And that was from 708 area code to Cindy. Oh, my. This one is Mike in Elmwood Park. 708 area code. He says, I took my wife out tonight. We've been married for 38 years.
Together. 36 years.
Oh, 36 years. Well, see, I have tears in my eyes. You have to forgive me. 36 years and together for 48 years. Mike from Elmwood Park says, Lois, happy Valentine to my wife.
Another from 708 area code. Never-ending love for our 62 years of marriage. All my love on this special day and always, that's Bonnie in Butternut.
Oh, that's sweet. Bob in Naperville wrote, Jeannie, I think it's Jeannie, J-E-A-N-N-I-E. Bob, I hope I got it right, Naperville. Jeannie, thank you for 27 years. We've weathered the storms, and honey, we have come out stronger. That's sweet. Also, I want to sneak this in because this was one that I found by going to our messenger from our Steve and Johnny page. Phil writes, Steve, hear me when I say I am the luckiest guy alive. Phil writes, thank you, Lynn. And that's very sweet.
Yeah.
But he's calling you out since you say you are.
Well, yeah, I am.
You want to go to the 262 area code?
Yeah, because the 940 is really interesting. Okay, 262 area code. My dear Eileen, thank you for being the center of it all. From being the head of my favorite Major League Baseball team to farmers market shenanigans, you're the best kind of influence a person could ask for. Save the last dance for me. That's from Sean.
Well, that's sweet, Sean.
That's cool.
You guys, some of you have a real way with words. In fact, Norwich native Dan Lewandowski, who's listening from the far southwest suburbs of Sarasota, Florida, says, remembering a spring day in 1978 at International Friendship Gardens near Michigan City, Indiana, when he said to himself, self, if I ever find the right girl, this is where I'm going to propose. 6 years later, I was on one knee quoting Shakespeare and my own verses while my then-fiancé, at a loss for words for the first and only time in her life, cried a waterfall of tears and vigorously nodded her head, yes. This saved me a lifetime of psychiatric services and boring everyone that I met with the story of the one who got away. 1 year later, standing before everyone we knew, I repeated my proposal at our wedding ceremony. And Elizabeth sang the Carpenters' One Love as her affirmative reply. There was not a dry eye in the church. We are still together 41 years later, trying to keep ahead of lovebirds Steve and Johnny. Thank you, Dan. It's very sweet. And this one is from Diane. It's interesting because we've had a number of people that say we've been married for, X number of years, lots of years. And Diane writes, We've been married one short year, so Jason, get ready. We've literally got a lifetime together, and I can't wait.
Oh, that's kind of cool.
That gave me goosebumps, too.
I like that.
Yeah.
Let's see. This one is from another one from a 940 area code. About a year ago, I officiated a wedding in Pekin, Illinois, as Jean-Luc Picard for the first time in my life. The couple is still together, living in Germany, so I guess I did okay. The bride chose a Nightmare Before Christmas goth and fantasy theme, including the best wedding cake I ever tasted.
Okay.
And there's a picture. He's got a picture there
of Jean-Luc Picard officiating.
You know who would love that is our next guest, Tom Appel, because he's a big Star Trek fan. I don't know if he's technically a Trekkie. Well, anyway. So a listener from 608 sent what I thought was code, and I said, can you decipher the code? I'm kind of curious, because he writes, my wife is sleeping. Happy Valentine's Day to my GSD, Gus, LOL. So it turns out the GSD is the German Shepherd dog named Gustav. So he's wishing Happy Valentine's Day to his dog. Well, that's fine. When your wife is awake tomorrow, you can tell her what she missed, and the dog got all the love, which is understandable. This one just in. I have to read these before we go on the air, because I don't want to go into something cold.
Okay.
We've not ever had one of those embarrassing moments, but I keep flashing back on, because we talked about when we first got texting ability on the show, and it happened to be shortly before a New Year's Eve, and it was a big deal. I mean, this was new technology, and we walked into the studio, and we had screens in front of us, and they said, now your over-the-road truckers at night don't have to hold on the line, because that became a problem, because they were eating up their minutes, and so now they could just text you and they can be a part of the show. And so, oh, that's great. And so that year we decided on New Year's Eve, we would use the texting capability to do something similar to Love Jones, where we would read out messages. And we did have a proposal, and he proposed to her, and she was listening, and she called us, and it was just a wonderful, wonderful story.
I bet I know where you're going.
Yes.
Wally?
Yes.
Yep.
I was doing traffic on the Wally Phillips show in the morning. I was doing a split shift at that time. I was doing mornings with Wally, and I'd come back in the afternoon and evening with Bob Collins. Oh, golly. Those were long days. Yeah. But anyway, Wally had an excellent producer.
Marilyn Miller.
She's absolutely
the best.
She should have written the book on how to produce a show, because she was just behind the scenes. She was pulling it all together. And
she would do a real pre-interview.
Yes.
I mean, she almost did her own show.
Yes.
Interviewing the people before they would go on the air to make sure that she didn't have any wacky people.
And would find a time that was conducive for them to have a conversation. So she'd say, well, we'll call you back when you take the kids to school and you get back home and on and on. So she had apparently interviewed this guy that wanted to propose, and here's the phone number of the girl, and oh, this is going to be great. And it was one of the saddest moments in live radio, because Wally brought the guy on and he interviewed him. Who are you? What's your story? So what's this all about? And it was Valentine's Day too. And he said, well, he wanted to pop the big question. He wanted to ask her to marry him. So Wally said, well, surprise, surprise, he brings her up on the other line. And she says, good morning. And right away I thought, this doesn't feel real good. And sure enough, if you can imagine a guy down on one knee holding the phone, that's what it felt like. Because he just, from his heart, he just gushed. And he said, will you marry me? She said, call me back.
Live radio.
And we all went, oh, no. She did not say another word. It was the saddest on so many levels, because the radio show, just if you imagine, the brakes just went on and you're like, what just happened?
And Wally, always ready with a quip. How do you quip your way out of that?
Yeah. And he's looking at me on the camera and I'm looking at him and we're like, oh, but there's really no other way out of this other than saying, you know what? We're going to let you guys go.
Yeah.
Call her. She said, call her. And
I don't recall. Were you able to talk to Marilyn after that to find out?
Yeah, because
did she say?
He was absolutely convinced that this was going to work flawlessly, and he was so excited that, you know, this didn't happen very often, and this is a surprise of all surprises. But I just will never forget that silence, and then call me, and it was like, oh. So many years later, our producer at that time, Denise, was dating a guy that was an attorney in town, and he came to us and said he wanted to ask her to marry him on the radio. And we said, you know what? We're not going
That's one of two times that happened.
Yes. And both times we said, we're not going to get burned like that, because that was the most sad, frustrating moment. You feel like you can see your life flashing before you. We said, we need to find out from her. And he said, well, don't tell her that I'm going to do this, but go ahead and quiz her. So we did.
So we, in our office after the show, we were just kind of going, because they'd been dating and we...
He said, well, if he asked you to marry you, what would you say? Oh, yeah. This is my dream. Whew. Okay. So, in fact, we did allow them to get engaged on the show.
The other one was Haley Dykes.
Doyle Dykes.
And
he was in to perform on our show, and he brought his daughter, Haley, and she was performing with him.
But in advance, Doyle had talked to us about this, and we knew Jake, who had been dating Haley.
Yes.
And
he said, Jake has come to me and asked me for her hand, old school. And I said, of course. He said, so something could happen. If you would let it happen on the radio, it would be really cool. So she had no idea that Jake was in town.
So there we are in the studio. Doyle's got his guitar, and Doyle and Haley are singing a couple songs. And after one of the songs, Jake walks in. Haley is absolutely surprised.
He drops down on one knee. We had microphones all around.
Yep.
And then he asked her to marry him. She says, oh, yes. Oh, and then after we talked to them, then they sang some songs.
Yeah.
And the next day, remember what happened?
They're at the airport.
And they're going through TSA. And one of the guys at TSA says, wait, aren't you going to get married? And everyone started clapping. We heard you on the radio last night. Congratulations. This is Jake and Haley. And I went, oh, that one worked out well. That was good. But
we learned from experience.
Yeah.
Never go into that kind of a scenario unless you know what the outcome is going to be.
Because you're talking about the ace producer and number one man on radio. And for this to happen, that moment was... I think everything stopped. I think everyone in the radio station just froze, went, uh-oh, what just happened?
Yep.
Call me.
Eek. Yeah. Okay.
Well, Valentine's Day is almost over with. And I had a back and forth with a listener who says, you know, not everybody is happy on Valentine's Day. And
we understand.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
We know that. It doesn't make Valentine's Day go away. It makes it just to understand that we know that. Been there, done that. We've been single.
Yep.
We
have had some less than wonderful Valentine's days. So we absolutely understand. And we understand people who don't want to hear about it, could care less about it.
Mm-hmm.
We get that. And if what we're doing bothers you, go away for 20 minutes and come back and we'll be doing something else.
Yeah. That's the beauty of a long show. It's going to change eventually. Maybe something will trip your trigger if it's not love. If love doesn't do it for you.
For example, after the news,
Yes.
We will be segueing to the world of all things that are automobile related.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to talk with Tom Appel. He is the publisher of Consumer Guide. And we'll also be joined by Jill Simonillo, who is Tom's cohort on Car Talk.
Because
car
Tom is,
stuff.
Tom is married to a different Jill. So
right.
She's his cohort.
Two Jills, no
yeah.
waiting.
The other Jill is his cohort. This is his cohort on the podcast.
I'm getting confused. Oh, hi, Tom. Are you here?
Hey, guys.
Hi. So what are you driving these days, Tom?
I am driving right now a wonderful small vehicle. It's the least expensive Chevy, and that is the Chevrolet Trax.
T-R-A-X?
Subcompact crossover. T-R-A-X, correct, mm-hmm. Jenny. And this is their smallest and least expensive Chevrolet you can buy right now. And it's a delight. It is nimble. It's fun to drive. It's roomy. It's easy on the gas. And even despite the fact that it's built in South Korea and General Motors is dealing with these South Korean tariffs, this vehicle, fully loaded, is $27,990.
What?
Which strikes me as an outstanding deal. It's a very good starter vehicle for a young buyer.
It's cute. It's
yeah.
really cute. And
yeah.
it's appointed well. The interior looks good. I mean, it doesn't look cheap.
The interior looks good, and it doesn't look cheap. It's a little cheap. There's some hard plastic and stuff mm-hmm. like that, but it presents very well. And I think if you're a new driver, you're not going to care anyway. You're just going to be glad you've got
well,
a nice
yeah.
car. Yeah.
It's something that you can actually afford, or
yep.
at least it feels like you can afford it, right?
And the fuel economy is excellent. It is a 3-cylinder turbocharged engine, and there is some buzziness.
Mm-hmm.
And the power is not great, but it's good. There's really mm-hmm. nothing here to complain about.
That's excellent.
But a 3-cylinder, which is, you know, back in the day, we used to think a 4-cylinder wouldn't
yeah.
get you any place. And now
yeah.
we have the technology to have a 3-cylinder engine that is more mm-hmm. than adequate for if you're a
yeah.
commuter.
Speaking after a week in the Ozarks in a 4-cylinder Mustang, I'm telling you, it couldn't do it. It was.
But this was back what oh. year and what year Mustang was this?
This was a 75 Mustang.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was the Pinto engine.
Oh, my gosh. Tom, I'm not kidding you. We would be climbing, going an incline, not a mountain, an incline, and cars behind us were anxious to pass us because we're trying to get up the hills. I'm like, why are we in this car? Plus, I was relegated to the back seat, which you know did not exist.
Yeah.
No, it's crowded. Yeah.
Yeah. So back to the Trax. That's a good one because people are always saying to us, is there anything under $30,000?
And are they readily available? Do you, the Chevy lots have a bunch of them?
That is a good question because I've found that there's a shortage of the Kia Seltos and the Hyundai Kona, which are in this class. But yes, there seem to be a lot of these. And I pass a Chevrolet dealer every day on my way to the health club, and it is packed with Trax. So.
Hmm.
They seem to be out there in supply.
What was your opinion of the Kona?
I love the Kona, and the Kia Seltos is similar. Those vehicles mm-hmm. are mechanically related. Both of those vehicles score really big points for general refinement, for power if you get the upgrade turbocharged engine, and really good utility and space utilization. They get a little bit expensive in top trim levels. There isn't as much power in some other cars, and you have to like the design. I think some people find it a little dull. Some people find it modern. Up to the buyer.
Hmm. Okay. But again, you're talking about something that's in the $30,000 range.
Yeah, I don't think you can put one of those together for under 30, but you can do it in the low 30s.
Are those vehicles available as used cars at this point?
Yes, there's a lot of them out there now.
Oh, well, that's good. So
yeah,
you could definitely get below 30,000 then.
Yeah, the Trax has been around now, I think, for 3 model years. So you should be able to find some of those used as well.
We are joined now by Tom's cohort in crime on the Car Stuff podcast.
The award-winning.
The award-winning Car Stuff podcast. She also is an automotive czar on her own.
Yes.
That would be Jill Simonillo. Hey, Jill, how you doing?
Good. How are you guys doing?
Great. Great. Thank you for joining us tonight. We talked about you earlier when we had John Davis on, and we were talking about garages being so small these days, and we said, yeah, but you got to see what Jill does with her little garage. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, I love to play the Will It Fit game and get a car like a Ford Expedition and say, okay, you can vote now. Do you think that's going to fit in my garage?
By the way, speaking of the Expedition, I have to say, that was crazy. I watched the video of you backing that big honking thing in. Was crazy. And a guy started to come down as you're moving. That was nuts.
You actually go up a slope, right, Jill?
Yeah, it's like a 22-degree angle. So I live in an apartment building with 32 units, and so there's like 32 parking spaces underneath the building. And I have to go up a ramp to get to my actual parking spot. But the great thing about it is, like, I just essentially back straight into the spot that's mine, and it makes it easy to come back out. But, yeah, as I was backing up that ramp, my neighbor was coming home, and I was just like, yep, dude, you're going to have to wait. big rig coming through.
Yeah.
The one question I had as I was watching you do that, if you didn't have cameras, would you have been able to do it?
It would certainly make it a lot trickier because I use, and I'll be honest with you, I use the cameras more to fine-tune than to actually guide me. I'm looking out my mirrors and, using my side mirrors a lot. But if I didn't have the side or the cameras, I think if there were parking sensors, that would be enough. And if I were, feeling really lucky, I think I could do it without the backup camera, but I think I would be a little less confident.
And vertically challenged folks should watch Jill, who fits in most trunks of most vehicles, yeah, including the little vehicles. This woman...
In fact, I think you can fit in the golf bag, can't you?
I have done that, actually.
I no doubt. But you are fearless, because I hold my breath when I watch some of these videos. I'm going, girl, no, not me. Mm-mm.
But you have been fitting into the Chicago Auto Show. Like that segue?
Yeah, I do.
And this is this is the final weekend for the Chicago Auto Show. So for people who are going to be checking it out, what are some of the must-see displays that you've been checking out?
Well, I mean, okay. The first thing you got to do if you're going to the Chicago Auto Show is you have to beeline it to the back of the floor, and you have to go to the Jeep test track. Mm. It's going to be a wait. It's going to be a little bit long, but that is the one thing that I would say everybody who's going to the Chicago Auto Show, especially if you're going for the first time, you absolutely have to do that. It is joyful, and they have articulation exercises. They have, we were talking about a 22-degree ramp. They have like a 45-degree ramp that they drive up. And then you like kind of stop at the top of the hill and you get a big view of the entire show floor. And they bring in like real dirt and plants and everything like that. And they really build out this test track. And I mean, even if you don't want to go on it, you got to go back and see it. You just got to watch the cars going through because it's really cool. So I think that's my number one must see thing at the show. Number two, you don't see a lot of concept cars anymore, but Corvette brought one. And so you got to then, from the Jeep, floor or area, you got to go over to the Chevrolet area and check out the CX concept. Hmm. And, this is like an all-electric, very futuristic, very cool-looking concept of what a Corvette could look like if it goes all electric.
Excuse you, Tom.
You okay, Tom?
Medic
over. I turned off my mic. Sorry.
Medic over to Tom's place.
I'll make it.
He is a cat, so you have to, fur balls. It happens. So you go over. So not a lot of concept cars. That's just the thing now. They just don't put the money into it, right?
No, I mean, they're just not bringing them around. I don't know, but that is a good one, and it is really cool to go look at.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say from there, you've got to go over to the Tesla area, and they have something on display there. It's called the Cybercab, and it was really funny. The day before I went to the media days at McCormick, I was heading up to the North Shore for an appointment, and I'm on the Edens. And I'm just after the split, and I see this gold car on the road, and I'm like, what is that? It looks like a Tesla, but it's not like a Tesla I've ever seen before. And it was like all gold. It had no rear window. And I'm just like, this is, what in the Tesla is this? And I'm like trying to angle for a good view of it. And I'm like, I'm trying not to look like I'm stalking the guy. And there's like a cyber truck that's like right behind it. And I'm like, there's something going on here. This is something different. And I couldn't figure out what it was. And I like kind of circled around the car. I took some very bad photos that I posted through on Twitter through my dirty, dirty windshield. And I was just like, I got nothing. I have no idea what this is. Then, like, lo and behold, the next day I'm at the Chicago show. And I'm like, there it is. That's it. That's what I saw. And essentially, this is, it has no foot pedals, no steering wheel.
What?
And it is a completely, like, and it's a driverless car that they are testing in Chicago right now with the idea that they are going to go into production by the end of the year. But they're in Chicago testing for cold, snow, you know, inclement weather. And so, like, seeing it on the road and then going to the auto show and saying, oh, my God, that's it. That was the thing. And you look inside and it's just two seats and a 30-inch screen, and that's it.
That's
that
weird.
Was on the road in Chicago.
No steering wheel freaks me out.
No, thank you. I'm sorry. I don't vote for this one at all.
No, and no rear window.
But it's something to see. And Tesla actually does have people on hand to talk about it. And so, I mean, it's. I think it's worth going over just to see. Let's be a little bit skeptical. I don't think they're really going to be on the roads by April. You know, they're doing testing.
Yeah.
But I don't think it's ready for prime time. But I find it fascinating, and I just thought it was cool to see one on the road, and then mm-hmm. two, you know, and there was a person in it. I'm assuming he had a computer in his laptop and was like looking for anything and would have been able to control it if there were problems. But or the guy in the Cybertruck was following him to make sure that everything was okay.
Right.
I don't know what the situation was. Yeah. I don't know how they were testing it, but it was really cool to like see it on the road and then be at the show and then be like, oh my God, that's it, that's the thing.
And what is it called?
It's called the Cybercab.
The Cybercab.
Okay.
Well, Tesla was smart to bring something like that that brought interest, as opposed to people coming by and sticking their tongue out at them.
Yeah.
You know.
Right.
Wow.
And they do have, I think, a couple of other models on hand to look at, but that to me was the grabber.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so of course, then after you leave the Cybercab, you've got to go over to the Subaru display. It is always, you know, one of the best displays in the Chicago Auto Show with real plants, and like you go and stand on a floor that like looks like it's moving. Like you're standing in the middle of a waterfall, and that's really cool. But then, of course, there's usually puppies. There's usually puppies in a Subaru display.
They are so smart to bring the puppies. That's brilliant.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Well,
are there any cars to be had at the auto show, or is it mostly SUVs?
You know, I mean, there are cars to be had. There are certainly a lot of SUVs, but you know, if you're back in the Jeep area or the Stellantis area in the back of the show before you like leave and go look at the Corvette, which there are some Corvettes on the floor, but you can stop by and look at the Dodge Charger, which is all, you know, it's all new for the 2026 model year, and they have the electric engine and the electric powertrain and the gas engine on hand, the six pack. And so those are on the show floor. They won the North American Car of the Year award this year.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if you go over to the Toyota display, in addition to the RAV4, which is an SUV, but all new for this model year, I haven't even driven it yet. It's so new. They do have their cadre of cars on the show floor as well. So you'll see the Camrys, the Prius, and that kind of thing. You know, over in Ford, you've got Mustang.
Mm-hmm.
That's the only car they're making these days. Hyundai, Kia, Honda, they all have like their full lineup on the floor. So there are cars. There's mm-hmm. minivans. I got to check out the minivans. I did a video for All Terrain Nation looking at the Kia Carnival and kind of doing a little comparison to some of the other minivans on the floor. So, I mean, there's a lot to see.
Yeah.
There's a lot.
And you got two more days to see it at the Chicago Auto Show. It wraps up at 8 o'clock on Monday night.
And before we let you go, the blatant plug light has started flashing. So in addition to checking you out on the Car Stuff podcast with Tom, where else should people find you?
Yeah, you can find me on YouTube, Instagram, TikTok. This is always Tom's favorite part of the show, by the way, because he loves it when I talk about my social media. But Instagram, LinkedIn, all the things, you can find me at my name, Jill Simonello, or I use the hashtag car du jour. So like soup du jour, but car du jour, because mm-hmm. I drive a different car pretty much every day. So any social media that you're on, if you search for that hashtag, you'll find me.
And finally, before we let you go, we've had several listeners that wanted us to make sure we got your rating of the donuts from this past week's Car Stuff podcast.
I did good this week.
You did really, really good this week. So he brought cherry donuts, which, unbeknownst to him, brought back a lot of childhood memories for me, because my dad would always take us to Dunkin' Donuts after church, and we would pick up donuts and take them home. And my favorite were always the cherry cake donuts. So the cherry cake donuts, like, bring back fond memories of childhood and my dad. So
he did
really well for several different reasons.
Well, you guys do really well on the podcast. It's really enjoyable. And folks should follow you, Jill, because you're doing some great stuff as an automotive journalist and a digital creator. So thank you so much for staying up late for us tonight and giving us a recap of what's happening at the auto show. Appreciate it.
Absolutely. Lots to see. I'd say it's definitely worth going.
Thank you. Take
care. Thanks a lot, Jill.
Bye-bye.
Happy Valentine's Day. Before we have so many things to get to, but there's a kind of a major Toyota story that you wanted to explain to us, right?
Yeah, it's a crazy story, and it's super interesting. But people might recall that, I think it's three model years ago now, Toyota launched the Grand Highlander. And this was... people are familiar with the Highlander. This is their Toyota's mainstay crossover. It's been around forever. It was one of the first ever crossovers. It goes way, way back. But the Grand Highlander was a little bit longer, had more third-row space, and was just a little bit more family-friendly than the Highlander. Well, it has dominated the segment. It does very well in the segment, and it has stolen a lot of sales from the base Highlander. So here's where the story gets interesting. For 2027... Toyota is converting the Highlander, the vehicle we've known and loved for all these years, to a pure EV. It becomes an electric vehicle.
Mm.
And they're going to give up those sales, assuming that most people are going to move to the Grand Highlander anyway. But we're now going to have this electric vehicle. It is three-row, but the third row isn't as useful as that in the Grand Highlander. But a lot of range, some good power. Really interesting move on Toyota's part.
Good move? What's your opinion?
It's probably a good move. Toyota is more international than most American retailers, sure. Automotive retailers, and they need to keep in the electric car game more than some other makers because they do business in China and they do business in Europe. So this is a good move for them. They're going to amortize some of the costs by building them here in the U.S. And this might be a breakthrough, too, in that it'll be the most popular name that's ever been applied to an electric vehicle.
Hmm.
And I think that's going to give some comfort to people who are just a little bit cautious about moving electric. It's an interesting play. It's not going to sell as well as the old Highlander, but it might really work well for Toyota.
And I suspect we're looking at easily $100,000 for something like that?
No, I don't think so. If we look at things like the Kia EV9 and the Hyundai Ioniq 9, those vehicles start in the low 60s, and I think that's what we might see here.
Okay.
But does this speak to the value of a manufacturer using a well-known name when they make a significant change to the model?
Yeah, I think so. Like if we go back in time, we remember like Pontiac completely threw away using the Le Mans name when they applied it to a small front-drive car. And the Impala name was not always well-used. But I think in this case, if it's a good electric vehicle, this can work very well. It's going to feel a little bit like progress and moving forward. And you can still find the Highlander name in another vehicle. It's just called Grand Highlander. Mm-hmm. And the Grand Highlander isn't significantly more money than the Highlander anyway. So I don't think it's going to be a painful move for shoppers who want to stay with a gasoline-powered midsize crossover.
There was a story that broke over the past few days. It's very disturbing, Tom. And we usually do recalls with you. But this was the story that I saw headlined a number of places under the "Stop, Do Not Drive" headline.
Yeah.
And that gets your attention because for this month, apparently, Stellantis has a do not drive warning. I mean, literally, do not drive warning for 225,000 older Chrysler, Dodge, Jeep, and Ram vehicles. And this is all because of the Takata airbags, right, Tom?
Yeah, this one's frustrating for a number of reasons. And before Stellantis was Stellantis, the Chrysler Group, or maybe it was Daimler Chrysler, depending on when it happened, has gotten into trouble in the past for not having executed a significant number of the recalls that are that have been issued for certain vehicles. And there's a bunch of vehicles included in this. It's vehicles between 2003 and 2016. And it's an awful lot of vehicles. It's too many to list. But the problem is not new. These vehicles have been recalled in the past. The problem is that people are not bringing their vehicles in for the replacement recall.
Is that why they're doing the stop, do not drive warning? To get people's attention?
Yes, to get people's attention.
Okay, because they say the airbag inflator can rupture, sending metal fragments into your cabin. So they're saying, do not drive, contact your dealer for a free tow and repair.
So I guess part of the question is this do not drive warning because A, you really, really, really shouldn't drive it, or B, we're really, really, really trying to get your attention?
I think it's both. Mm-hmm. The problem is if you have a frontal impact, there's a good chance, not a great chance, but a chance that the airbag hurts you more than it helps you.
Yeah.
Wow.
And it has killed people, so that's a problem. And you may remember the problem was that there is a metal cap over the inflator, over the propellant, and over time it corrodes, and the metal itself, which is supposed to swing away, actually breaks off and ends up...
Ooh.
Yeah, it ends up moving forward with the airbag itself, and people have been injured and people have been killed by this. Relative to the total number of airbags, not a huge number, but any deaths are unacceptable, especially from an airbag.
Mm-hmm.
So, this is to get people's attention. Now, NHTSA does not have the power to actually stop people from driving.
Right.
So this is a warning. They want to get people's attention, and Stellantis is getting a kick in the butt here to try harder to get these people to come in.
And how difficult for dealerships, because some of these cars are 20 years old that people
are buying. It's bad, and I think the fixes are going to be complicated, too, because parts are old and things don't work as well as they used to.
I was just going to ask you that, because we've had a case of dealing with a car that is 20-ish years old, and some of the parts are just not available. So my question to you was going to be, okay, you're going to do the airbag, but are there parts associated with that airbag that are going to be near impossible to get?
I guess they're going to have to create them. And the 225,000 outstanding vehicles, there's going to be a pretty big take right now if people are freaked out by this, and hopefully they are. Hopefully they're scared into action. So they are going to have to get dealers the parts that they need to do this. But it might take a while if enough people respond.
So we got your attention with this do not drive warning. Going into it, the affected models include the 05 to 15 Chrysler 300, the 07 to 09 Aspen, the 06 to 15 Dodge Charger. And Charger's having a great year. I mean, everybody's looking at the new Charger and going, yay, but this is the 08 to the 14 Challenger, the 03 to 16 Ram pickup, and the 07 to 16 Jeep Wrangler. So if that is your vehicle, then you should not be driving it. You should contact your dealer for a free tow and a repair of that vehicle to get rid of those Takata airbags. So do not drive. Tom, a listener, we started out talking about you driving at Trax. He's driving, a listener from Peoria is driving his Fountain Blue Trax, and he says he loves it. Nice to hear you say good things about it. Another listener, this is Dean from Indy, has a question for you. He says he wonders what you think about the manufacturer's extended warranty plans for new vehicles. He recently purchased a new car, and this was not pushed at him at the time of purchase, but he's since been offered the plan if he purchases it prior to mileage limits. So what are your thoughts?
Yeah, the first thing is, and I'm glad he's considering it after the fact, you do not have to and you should not buy an extended warranty at the time of purchase. You probably don't have a clear idea of how long you're going to own the car, but if you do get rid of the car in 3 or 4 years, then you never needed the warranty. and if you're going to keep the car, if you drive it till the bumper-to-bumper warranty wears out, 336 usually on most cars, and you want to make a decision to buy the warranty, that's the time to do it. And be sure to shop from dealer to dealer, and be sure you're shopping for a manufacturer warranty. You want a General Motors warranty or a Stellantis warranty or a Ford or a Toyota mm-hmm. warranty, because any dealer will back those up, and that's the best way to go. But again, I've suggested this before, and I feel like we talked about this maybe just a couple of weeks ago. If you can, find out how much the warranty is and just save that money. Mm-hmm. Just put it in a bank account or something like that. You may not need it. These warranties are usually priced for catastrophic failure, like an engine or transmission. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't happen very much anymore. And unless you're very, very afraid of that happening, I think there are better ways to go.
But you always, always, always want to go with a manufacturer's warranty. You never yes. want to get a warranty from Joe's Snack Shop. It's going to be wasted money.
Yeah, you want to make sure, because the manufacturer warranty will be handled by any dealer of the brand. So that's the best way to go.
And prepare yourself. If you buy a new vehicle, as we did in 23, you will get a lot of letters, because we probably get one or two a month saying, you need to get this warranty. Get it now. And here's the price, $19.99. That's $1,999. So you say, Tom, if you got that money, put it in the bank and just put it there in case your engine falls out.
The blatant plug light has just started flashing. So what's going on at Consumer Guide, and where should people follow you and like that?
We had a really interesting conversation this week on the podcast with Mark Leneve, and people might remember that name. He was one of the guys before the bankruptcy of General Motors mm-hmm. who was in charge over there. And he's now a partner at a company called Franchise, I forgot the name of it, FEP. But one of the things that they do is they are a capital investment firm, and they invest in dealerships. And the conversation is really interesting, because one of the things that we're learning is that the average age of a car dealer now, a principal, an owner at a dealer, is like 70 years old.
What?
So they are looking to get out of the business. So when we hear about car dealers being sold, this is why. These guys are retiring. They don't always have kids or family that want to take over the business. So increasingly, very big corporations are buying up all the dealership chains. And this is going to change how we buy cars in the next 5 to 10 years.
One of the questions I have is, I hope this is not going to be the same kind of scenario as we have seen with newspapers, where in companies like Alden buy up the newspapers and basically get as much money as they can and cut back on staff and service and things like that. How is this, if this company buys a local car dealership, how do they maintain the integrity that a good dealership has established over the years?
One of the interesting things about it, it's Franchise Equity Partners, and forgive me for the brain lapse there. They like to take very large minority stakes in companies, like 49%, and they let the companies run themselves. So what they're looking for are really good dealerships that are operating well, and they're giving these people that own these dealerships some cash to fund their own exit and maybe to find new partners or to expand if they choose to do that. But they're not doing much, and this is per the conversation, people should listen to it. They're not doing much to come in and change the way the operation works.
Good.
They tend to buy places that they like, and they work with them.
Well, on the subject of selling cars in a new and innovative way, I was walking through the Old Orchard Shopping Center the other day, and I, out of the side of my eye, I glanced over there, and there was a store called Rivian. Does that have anything to do with the car, Rivian?
That is, yeah. They have some showrooms in the Chicagoland area, and that is one of them.
Huh.
So you can go in there and actually see a couple of the Rivian models. And Rivian right now, they're about to bring out their Model 2, right? They had the pickups, the Rivian, the R1s, that's the big pickup and big crossover. They're about to come out with compact crossover and a compact pickup. So they're about to expand, and this is kind of an exciting time for them.
But if you go into a place like a storefront, not a dealership, and you're going to see a vehicle, and you say,
can't take it for a test drive.
You're not going to buy that vehicle, so you're buying something sight unseen.
Yes. I think that, I don't know if that particular showroom does offer test drives. I'm not entirely sure. Some locations
This
do.
Was a small storefront. Yeah. So I can't.
We have talked about the nightmare of people buying cars sight unseen, and that was something that was a big deal with Tesla, but we've also seen it with Lucid and Rivian, and that's a terrible way to go. You want to drive a vehicle no matter how good you think it is.
Mm-hmm. I know we've mentioned this before, but we know people that said, yes, but I want in a different color. And so they put down money, and when the vehicle comes in, it doesn't have all the things that they fell in love with on the car that they test drove.
Well, it's the color you wanted.
Yeah,
but
you ordered it.
Does it have a trunk? No, but it's the color you wanted.
It's got four wheels, you know. Wow.
Well, speaking of dealership expansion, I've been reading this past week a couple things about Genesis. One, that apparently they are doing some major expansion of standalone Genesis dealerships. And there was a story I saw this week where apparently Genesis is really, with the next generation Genesis, they're really separating themselves even further from Hyundai. In this is going to be a completely standalone Genesis vehicle. What are you hearing about that?
Yeah, people might recall that Genesis really botched this launch back when. And for a long time, they just sold two sedans that no one was interested in. And there was some confusion about whether or not you had to have a standalone franchise or whether you could sell it out of your Hyundai store. And it was a total mess. But since that time, Genesis products have improved dramatically. They're awesome. People love Genesis products, and the dealers can make money selling these things, and the volume is improving, and they've got new product coming. So now is a good time for dealers to consider opening unique stores. And at some point, when they renew these licenses with these dealers, these franchise agreements, they're probably going to require them to be standalone stores. And if you're a customer, that's kind of nice, because if you're buying a luxury vehicle, you would like people who are trained to deal with high-end customers. You want a service department that knows how to deal with your vehicle specifically. And usually the environment's just a little bit nicer in the store as well. So this is a good thing to do. It's good for branding, and it's good for customers.
Sticking around for a few more minutes, what did you do with your ever-loving Jill on Valentine's Day?
We didn't do that much.
Jill
just surprised the family with a new TV. We got a new Roku TV. So we're all very excited because my daughter lives with us. And, so that's the thing. Not a lot otherwise. I had some errands to run today with my mother. So
Then you spent Valentine's with a special someone.
But okay,
family time.
Sticking with the Valentine's theme for a second, I don't know that we've ever asked, how did you and Joe meet?
We met, basically she had to decide whether to date me or turn me into HR.
Why?
We worked at a market research company together. I was a supervisor there, and she was an intern. And she was cute as a button. She always dressed much better than the job required. And she had a really good attitude for what was a terrible intern program. So I was just impressed by her moxie. We worked nights. We worked second shift. So we all went out for drinks afterwards. And we started to hang out. And the rest is history.
Either marry you or go to HR. I love that. Wow. Well, speaking of relationships, I have to share with you something I came across during the news.
This is so freaky. And it relates to relationships and to car stuff. You ready for this?
Yes. Okay. So a friend of ours who's a meteorologist down in the Panhandle, Chris Smith, posted, fun fact, Mrs. Smith got the gift of gas for Valentine's Day. And I'm prepared for him to say he took her out for tacos or something, you know, or to White Castle. But no, he literally signed her up with a service that comes to your house and gasses up your vehicle. Huh. It's called Fueled, but it's spelled F-U-U-L-E-D. And it's a family-owned company that's now franchising, and they plan to go nationwide. They have gas tanker trucks. They come to your house and gas up your car or your boat or whatever.
And as Johnny was explaining all this to me, I did a little search, and I found their Facebook page, facebook.com/fueled, and
it's two U's,
F-U-U-L-E-D,
and it is out of Panama City Beach, Florida.
Really?
Out of our little town in the Panhandle.
And it started as a family when the teenage girl in the family got her license. She had a really scary experience at a gas station. And she came home terrified because she felt like she just got away from some very scary men that were approaching her at the gas station. So they said, you know what? This is what we need to offer, a service where people don't have to go to gas stations.
And on their Facebook page, they have this logo of a donkey kicking a pump. And it says, kick the pump, get your fuel delivered to you. And it says, boat and fleet DM or call. It's an 850 area code. And
but they apparently pumped 100,000 gallons of gas last year.
It says, we bring the fuel to you, download our app, and get fuel delivered overnight to every vehicle in your driveway for only
$24.95. What?
So
wait, you got to pay for the gas.
Yeah, yeah, that's probably, so I think this is the service fee.
Yeah.
But it's, and you could call them right now. It says Panama City Beach, Florida, also Southport, Freeport, Santa Rosa. But we know all those area, and their website is fueled.com, F-U-U-L-E-D.com.
And I did come across their page where they say, if you are interested in bringing this service to your neck of the woods, contact us because we would like to start franchising.
Interesting.
What do you think? Do you think that's something that would fly?
I don't think it would fly much around here.
Because we have a gas station on every corner.
But wait, Tom, as I was searching, I just found that there are, in Illinois, any of a number of places. Now, this is for emergency fuel delivery, but you can call if you're out of gas, you're stranded, whatever. You call and they will come to you and they will bring the fuel to you.
Well, that I kind of understand, but yeah.
It seems cost dependent too. $24.95 is a lot for one car.
Mm-hmm.
Unless you're only going to pay $30 to fill the car, you're doubling the price of the gas. But if you're, you know, if you got a driveway full of cars
and a boat, and
if you're older too, I can see the appeal.
Yeah. Well, how interesting though that it was the whole idea was spawned by a 16-year-old having a scary experience. And the family saying, you know, there are a lot of other people that have these scary, and they give the facts about robberies that happen in gas stations and things like that.
Okay, I'm looking at their FAQ. It says, how much does fuel for home cost? Fuel delivery membership fee plus fuel memberships are billed monthly at $24.95 per month and cover every vehicle in your driveway.
I could see neighbors bringing their car over.
Plus, fuel for fun delivery requests will have all delivery fees waived.
Huh.
Not sure what that is, but...
Well,
there are similar services for electric vehicles, though I haven't seen any of them hit scale. But we have seen things where people will come to an office building, parking garage, and charge electric vehicles.
Really?
Yeah. I haven't seen any of these catch on, but none of the big charging providers seem to be interested in this, but I have seen this, and I don't know if they're local, if they're regional, but that's something that might catch on as well.
Hey, Julian, let's get in touch with somebody from Fueled for next week, and we will talk to them.
I think it's a great idea, and more power to them being so innovative, but I hope I'm never so busy that I can't stop at the gas station.
Yeah.
I just hope my life never gets that crazy. Yep. Because how do you get a 32-ounce soda if you're not stopping at the gas station?
Well, now, maybe that could be a part of the membership thing. We'll bring you a soda, too, and we'll bring you some chips.
And some beef jerkies you know, maybe a weird hot dog.
And the daily paper. So all those things right. would be part of that. Boy, we really have touched on recalls, haven't we?
Tom, before we get to recalls, real quick, a listener from Nashville, David, says the 2026 Chevy El Camino, is that a real thing, Tom?
It is sadly not. The El Camino, and there was the Ford Ranchero, was the same concept. These things go back to the 60s, actually the late 50s. And they were really cool combinations of a two-door car, usually a hardtop, with a pickup bed. And there was some interest in them, but they were never all that popular. And people might remember when Pontiac was selling a GTO that they were actually importing from Australia, from Holden, there was some talk of them importing a quote-unquote Ute, which was very much the same concept, but that did not happen. And ultimately, Americans aren't really that interested in it. Enthusiasts love the idea. I love the idea. I think it's so cool. But ultimately, there's never really been a market for that. And there isn't really any good American vehicles right now to base that product on. Mm. So yeah. it's not going to happen, unfortunately.
Sidebar note, those Holden GTOs were really cool cars.
They were cool, and they were really legitimately high performance. And I think that they're pretty collectible already.
Oh, I bet.
Okay, recall. We got to get to recalls.
Yes, yes, yes. There's some other ones, Arthur, Tom.
Yeah, I got three big ones here to talk about. One of them is a little disappointing. A lot of Toyota recalls in the last year, and here's another one. 141,000 Priuses, and this is all versions of the Prius Prime, and the Prius plug-in hybrid, between 2023 and 2026. The rear doors are subject to popping open while the car is moving.
Oops.
And the problem is water. Yeah, water's getting into the electric motor, the little servo there.
So the door switches.
Needs to be replaced.
Wow. Can you imagine driving?
Goes out.
You're driving along and your door pops open?
Yeah, that's scary. And if you've got kids, it's super scary.
Oh, yeah.
Of course. Word goes out late March.
Wow. A listener wanted to know, back to the do not drive recall, should they be receiving recall notices on that, or can they just go ahead on Monday and call their dealership to ask about their Chrysler, their Aspen, their Charger, whatever?
It is unclear whether or not NHTSA is going to issue recall notices on this. And
yikes.
Part of the problem is we're talking about vehicles that are pretty old.
Yeah.
So the chain of custody is a little unclear. Once vehicles start getting sold secondhand and then repeat secondhand sale,
sure.
Very hard to track down owners. So at this point, they've got to advertise basically more broadly to try to get people to come in. I don't know if notices are going to go out or not.
Well, I'm glad we had a chance to talk about it because you're right. It goes back to 2003. So,
yeah.
Again, this is the Takata airbag inflator is a problem, and they're saying do not drive your car. Call a dealership and ask them what you do. Can they just come and get it? They're supposed to tow it for you free of charge and then repair it.
Has there been any recall that has cast as wide a net as the Takata airbags? Because this has been going on forever and has impacted just about every manufacturer for years.
No, and this demonstrates one of the fatal flaws in the way that cars are built these days. We usually stand back and are awed by what they call just-in-time delivery and just-in-time manufacturing. And it was a Japanese concept that the American makers, to save manufacturing costs, adopted. But what it means is that you have fewer suppliers and fewer supply lines, and it's easier to negotiate, and it's easier to make supply chain decisions. But the bad news is if something happens to that product and there's only one or two suppliers, there's big problems. And we just saw this last year where Ford ran into trouble with its aluminum supplier for the F-150, the big pickup trucks.
Yeah.
The supplier's factory caught fire, and they couldn't build trucks for like a month. Hmm. Which for Ford, that's a huge deal. The F-150 is their bread and butter. So that's the way manufacturing is right now. We see this with the tariff issues too, that everything is so tightly interwoven that little things can break everything.
Mm-hmm. Last week on the air, I don't know how we got on the subject, but I was talking about my days as a traffic reporter, and I said we used to have car fires all the time.
Yep.
Uh-huh.
And with Bob Collins, he called it a car fire. And I would have to interpret it for the listener that we meant it's a car fire. But Ford Motor Company has a recall of 116,672 vehicles recalled due to engine block heater short circuits, which could pose a car fire. They don't tell us what vehicles those are. It's just under the umbrella of Ford Motor Company. Do you know anything else about that?
Yeah, that's basically trucks. It's probably a lot of F-150s with the aftermarket. The factory installed engine block heater. Something like that is so simple it shouldn't burst into flames. But there you have it. And I think they're just going to replace the unit. I think it's a pretty simple thing to do.
Do you have a theory on why we used to see car fires more than we do today? Because it was a regular thing on my traffic shifts.
It was. And one of the things that has changed a lot, because I used to commute into the city in the 80s and 90s, or in the 90s, and I'd see those fires all the time. But cars don't overheat as much as they used
to.
Radiators are better. We don't really use old school hoses and things like that. So slow coolant leaks are less of a problem. A car has to be much older, I think, to be in the condition where it might burst into flames on the side of the road.
Well, I actually remember a caller, and this was in the probably in the 90s, and she claimed that there were flames coming out of her dashboard. Flames.
Ew.
Yeah.
Yeah, get out of the car. That's bad.
Let me write this down. If flames are coming out of your dashboard,
get out of the car.
Okay.
If you want to check to see if your vehicle is under a recall, go to NHTSA, NHTSA.gov/recalls. You put in your vehicle identification number and information will pop up for you. Boy, that reminds me of the days when you used to do, we would take people's VIN numbers and you would do a report. Remember that, Tom?
I do. Yeah, that was fun.
That was fun. Gosh.
Well, now you can still do Carfax stuff.
But yeah. But they got them for free on our show.
Back to, just for a second, back to the fueled thing. That's F-U-U-L-E-D.
Mm-hmm.
I'm looking at their Facebook page, and this is an interesting spin. The true cost of driver downtime. When you go into a gas station to fill up, where thousands disappear, a fuel stop adds 20 minutes per trip, 520 hours, $13,000, zero productivity. I mean, they're
good.
The way they spin this is really fascinating.
So number one, you might get killed if you go to a gas station. And number two, look at you wasting your time and money. I'm sold. Come fill up my car.
So the loss per year, 520 hours, cost loss annually, $13,000 in lost payroll.
Wow.
I love the way they're spinning this.
Yeah.
Yeah, but going in for Funyuns is not wasted time.
I know. And Twizzlers. Come on.
And Twizzlers, yes.
Especially if you're on a longer trip when you need good traveling food.
What were those? The pork rinds.
Meat skins.
That we used to get to.
Because they would keep us awake, remember? Because when you crunch them, they're so loud. You cannot sleep if you're crunching them.
But again, this is back in the day when we would get off the air at 5 in the morning. We'd get in the car at 5:15, and we would pull into our driveway in Panama City Beach, Florida, 1,000 miles away at 7:30 at night.
And our bodies would be vibrating for the next two days.
Because literally.
Just like that road feel. You're like, oh, wow. Okay, before we let you go and say goodnight, what's coming up on your podcast? What should we know about Consumer Guide Automotive?
Next week, we're talking to someone. This is Tuesday's episode from Infinity about the jeans-wearing robot.
Hold on. What? Yeah. What? It's jeans-wearing robot?
Yeah, it's all about
The way you have phrased this, this means jeans are wearing a robot?
Or a robot is wearing...
Robots are wearing jeans.
Okay, all right, just need to clarify.
Yeah. But it's all about how, like, denim, for example, can wear on fabric or leather, especially white leather.
Yes!
So we're going to talk about long-term wear testing on certain luxury vehicles, specifically Infiniti in this case.
How funny, because we've come full circle.
We were talking about this earlier with John Davis about cars with white interiors and you get it with a new pair of jeans.
This is the craziest trend, because on one of his last shows, every car had snow white leather interior. And I cringed because I'm thinking, a new pair of jeans, that dye comes off. It's bad news.
It is. And if it's a perforated seat, it tends to show more dirt.
Yes.
Yep.
Or quilted. You get the nice quilted. It's like Genesis does the quilted seats.
Yeah.
Don't want those in white, I'm sure.
No. I don't. You know, we have white leather sofas and people come to our house and I go, new jeans? Yeah. How'd you know? Sit on this towel.
Yeah. Sit on it.
Yeah, sit on this towel or stand for the night. Well, Tom, thank you as always, and thanks for staying with us a bit longer, and our thanks to Jill for stopping by tonight.
And happy Valentine's Day.
Yeah, thanks a bunch.
Well, thanks for having us.
We'll talk
to you
soon.
Thanks for being had.
Thank you, Tom.
Bye-bye.
And again, we would like to remind you again, please check out our blog. It's steveandjohnny.wordpress.com. We do a number of posts. Boy, this week there were a couple days we had a ton of posts, and it just happened that way.
Yep.
And one of the many reasons we are trying to get you to hang out with us on our blog or on Blue Sky, Zuckerberg is doing some strange things on Facebook.
Yeah.
I'll give you an example. A post from someone who said, and yes, this is political, but that doesn't matter. They had posted all of the names that were released in the Epstein files. Apparently, Zuckerberg didn't care for that, and it was deleted.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry. No, wrong. I don't care what side of the political spectrum you are on. Wrong. My point is, there's a lot of weird censorship and weird stuff going on Facebook, so we are less than enamored of it right now.
For some time now, you've been unable to use certain words because they're trigger words that get you taken down and sometimes put you in Facebook jail. For example, if you use the word sex and you spell S-E-X, whoop, you might get pulled.
Yep.
You have to spell it S-E-G-G-S to get around it.
Yep.
And instead of saying kill, you have to say unalive.
It's just ridiculous.
I don't want to be unalived when I'm standing on a street corner at 3 o'clock. That's stupid.
So the point is we're navigating to some other options. So our blog is stephenjohnny.wordpress.com. We would love it if you would subscribe. There is no subscription fee, and we don't spam you. You just get an email anytime we do a new blog post. And you can also find us on Blue Sky. Just do a search for Steve and Johnny, and you'll find us there.
And typically, everything that goes up on Facebook at this point also ends up over on the blog for people who don't choose to be on Facebook.
Yeah.
And we have friends that don't choose to do that.
And we need to stop talking because the blue light is starting to flash. And am I hearing the sound of a Zamboni in the background? I think
clean up an aisle three?
Yeah, could be.
Mm-hmm.
And it's getting close to the time for our... There it is. That's Big Plug Bob.
Coming through.
On the Zamboni.
Cleaning up the studio.
That means it's time for us to pitch for the last caller.
We are going to go to our last caller wrapping up this five-hour show. And I believe we're going to go to Kentucky.
And that would be Mike. You're in Kentucky, Mike?
Yes, sir. How you doing?
Good. How are you tonight, Mike?
You know, I'm doing great. I'm originally from Park Ridge.
Yeah.
Mayberry.
Where are you living now?
Louisville.
In Louisville.
And, you know, years ago, I was on Top of the Morning with Max Armstrong and Orion Samuelson.
Oh, you were up early.
Oh, yeah. And we were in Bozo's Circus, and you know when you'd watch Bozo's Circus on TV, it looked big?
Yep.
But when you showed up at 2501 Bradley's place, it wasn't all that big.
Yep. Wasn't that crazy?
Just a small studio.
And you walk in, you go, this can't be. And then you realize the wonder of television. It's just, it's crazy. And when we started 41 years ago at this radio station on this night, we were working on Bradley Place. And
were you really?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Back where we had an actual cafeteria and cafeteria ladies and people had their own tables in the cafeteria.
Because that was back in 1985, and I think it wasn't until
5 years.
5 years later that moved down to the Tribune Tower.
Yep. Were you farming?
Well, I was weaned on Wally Phillips.
Well, and how did you end up with the farm crew? Were you farming in Park Ridge?
Well, here I was an ag major in college.
Okay.
And what happened was Max and I bumped into each other, and at the Northern Trust Bank in downtown Chicago, they have what they call NorTrust Farm Management.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And I was doing an internship there to learn how to be a farm manager.
Oh.
One thing led to another. Max didn't even know. At the time, Max was living out in Schaumburg, which is 15 minutes from Mayberry, Park Ridge.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't know that we had a farm program at the NorTrust Farm Management.
Mm-hmm.
So to make a long story short, one thing led to another. Max and I bumped into each other. Orion and Max wanted me to come onto the show at the top of the morning to talk about it. And that's when I went to Bradley Place, and I looked at Max and I said, where the heck is the rest of the circus?
Well,
this city is pretty small.
Mike, let me tell you the eye-opening experience we had when two men were walking down the hall toward us, and one was on one side of this big wooden box and one was on the other side.
And it was a rainy day.
And I said, ooh, what do you have in there? And they laughed and they walked up and they lifted the lid, and it was Bozo's hair. His hair, because he couldn't.
They were doing an appearance, so Bozo was going to drive in one vehicle, and they were taking his hair in another vehicle, so it wouldn't.
Because it was going to flop in the humidity and the rain. And you look at Bozo's hair in this big wooden box, and it's like, it's kind of creepy and it's kind of cool at the same time. I have to ask you: did you go on to do farm management for a living?
I did, and then. I got out of it. What happened was Nortrust Farm Management downsized, and they moved the farm management office out to Des Moines, but it was minute compared to what we had.
Oh, it's a big deal. Yeah.
Right. And then from there, I went on to starting my own business, and one thing led to another.
What kind of business did you start?
I do business with auto dealers. I do business. Oh. You name a big dealer in Chicago, and I've done business with them.
And here we were talking this hour about car. Well, actually, at last hour about car dealerships and the future of dealerships, and the fact that the owners are typically 70 years old and up, and their families don't want the dealership. So, what's going to happen to them?
Just take the money and run.
But I also say this: there's a phrase in the industry called the dealer's son.
Yeah.
And a dealer's son had the silver spoon.
Mm-hmm.
He may have the same last name, but he's not the same dealer.
Yeah.
And
there was an example we heard of that, and I'm not going to mention the dealership, but it's a Chicago area dealership, a large dealership that within the past, how many years?
The dad died last year.
And the son took over, and the dealership has gone down like crazy. They have nothing but horrible reviews, and this is a major dealership.
Yeah. It's pretty shocking.
I'll say this. I was blessed. I did business with a lot of the players. The largest dealer in back that I did business with was Schaumburg Toyota.
Mm-hmm.
What a great family. And at the time, they were delivering over 1,000 cars a month, new and used.
Ooh, wow.
Yeah, that's, you talk about rocking and rolling. And then back in 89, I put a guy that I nicknamed Horseface in the car business.
And okay.
And his name is John Elway.
Really?
We did the purchase for all 15 dealerships for him.
Mike?
We bought them for $15 million, and then we sold them for $87.95
years later. Whoa.
That's a return on investment.
I got to know before you go. Did John know you called him Horseface?
I said it to him all the time. And the problem I had was number 57, the center, was his best friend.
Keith, that's a problem. Yeah.
And he's as big as Dan Hampton.
Yes. Wow. I hate to do this, John. It's a pleasure meeting you. I'll tell Max that we connected on the radio tonight, and we're going to send you out an official WGN Radio T-shirt. And when we're driving through there on I-65, if we see you at the Waffle House wearing that T-shirt, we'll know it's you.
Yep.
Mike from Louisville. Thank you.
So hold on, and Julian will get some information from you off the air. This has been a fast show.
Yes.
And our thanks to everybody who was nice enough to hang out with us, to John Davis and John Duncanson and Sylvia Gomez. How great to reconnect with them after all these years. And Mike and Maggie from Lucky Mud. In fact, we may have to have them perform
When
we're down in Florida.
Yeah. I love it. And our thanks to our crew, Ron and Sylvia is in the newsroom tonight.
Yeah.
She picked up for Gabe, who's celebrating Valentine's Day with his honey.
And Bob was here tonight. You didn't hear from him, but he's still here. And Julian on the other side of the glass, keeping us out of jail at least for another week.
And a special guest tonight, Ms. Erica, is in the house tonight.
Yes.
So thank you all for being here with
Erica,
us.
You can come back. Julian, we're not sure about you. theoretically, we will talk to you at 9 o'clock next week. Stay safe.